when the Pentagon was approached by Bill Gates and the EcoHealth Alliance. They wanted to release protein crystals in China. And the Pentagon said, here's one telegraph, that's a bio attack. That could lead to nuclear war. We're not going to do that. Well, that now takes us to Dr. Giordano, who's the head neuroscientist at Georgetown, at the top Pentagon Air Force DARPA meeting.
Some ongoing studies with our colleagues in the medical branches of NATO have in fact shown that the use of nanoparticulate matter in a scatter arrangement can be used to incur what looks to be broad-scale epidemiological stroke epidemics. So what we're able to do here is infiltrate the brain space with nanoparticulate matter that aggregates in situ, on site in the brain. And there's one of two things, either penetrates from the vascular space, gets in through the bloodstream, gets in through the nose, through the mucosa, or infiltrates the vascular space and clogs it. What is the result? What's called a nanoparticulate stroke or a hemorrhagic diathesis, fancy word, for it's a predisposition to individuals having brain bleeds. Demonstrated? Oh, absolutely. We're able to show animal models of same, and the Italian group has done a fair amount of work demonstrating that nanoparticulate matter can be highly disruptive, not only of brain vascularity, but brain function. You may not necessarily incur a stroke, but you're going to begin to disrupt the network properties of the brain, and as a result, engage something more of a long wars effect through the use of these types of matters, where you now begin to influence the population in increasingly concentric circles of expansion.
Oh, did you hear next month the new COVID variant vaccine's ready? It's a new nasal spray. You just talked about nasally, which gives you a thing that grows protein crystals, then you spread. Isn't that loving and liberal?
We are following some breaking medical news for you. Researchers at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center are working to develop the first nasal spray vaccine for COVID-19. The spray does not need to be administered by a medical professional and does not require refrigeration. Clinical trials are now planned for the U.S. and Africa.
Nothing I'm telling you here is sci-fi. It all exists within the medical range and how we're able to treat a variety of neurological disorders targeting the brain, being able to get in there more specifically, affect certain neural cancers, etc. And we spoke earlier about a technique that's become very well known, CRISPR-Cas9, that allows us to literally modify bugs in a variety of different ways. So I now may be able to take a relatively harmless microbiological agent, a bacterium or a virus, do some gene editing and make this thing far more morbidly viable, make it far more virulent, and in some cases even make it far more lethal.
Gene editing, gain of function, illegal as hell. I'm not ever going to surrender. I physically can't do it.
It's my great
F*** you, Klaus Schwab. F*** you. I got plenty of words for you, but at the end of the day, F*** you and your New World Order and F*** the horse you rode in on and all your s***.
And so they know if that spirit begins to, in their words, infect other people, it's game over for them to turn us into robots and play God and give us all these orders and tell us how to live and tell us what to do.
You're talking about Oxford and the Oxford Council that has just announced that it's going to break up Oxford into 15-minute communities, call them 15-minute cities, where everything that they say you need is within the 15-minute walk or cycle ride of where you live. And that you cannot, under this proposal, leave your 15-minute city in a car more than 100 times a year, or you find every time you do. Now, what is that? That's simply lockdown. It's COVID lockdown, but it's done under the guise of climate change.
And so that's what this is really all about, is your ability to have free will that God gave you, and they're trying to take that away.
The only thing God managed to create are organic beings. All these trees and giraffes and humans, they are just organic. But we are now trying to create inorganic entities, inorganic life forms, cyborgs, artificial intelligence, and so forth. If we succeed, and there is a very good chance we will, then very soon we will be beyond.
That's why I oppose them, and that's why I fight them. And they act like, oh, they understand the universe and they're bringing balance to it. And no, they like to hurt people. They like to destroy children. They like to steal people's energy. They like to see people in miserable situations because it makes them feel good because they hate themselves. Hunt.
How do I explain to people that my tongue is blue? Because I love this stuff, methylene blue. I'm able to work like 18-hour days sometimes. This stuff is like rocket fuel.
I didn't know you were going to plug this. You even ordered it yourself, I later learned. What is the effect of our medical-grade methylene blue been on you, Roger?
Incredible, both physical and mental energy and focus. I mean, it really is like rocket fuel. Oh, you still like Brain Force? Back when I did the show with Owen Schroyer, the original, the real War Room, I was a big aficionado of Brain Force and Brain Force Force Plus. This is even a greater product. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Well, I've not had any since Friday. I only take it every couple of days. So I'm going to take my dose of methylene blue, my Topo Chico. It is amazing. And people ask me, what does it do? It cleans out your mitochondria. It skips the oxidization process in the cell. It's like iodine at the next level. It is such a game changer. Roger Stone, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. God bless you.
It's Friday, August 22nd, in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this scene, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday morning from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. A very exciting day. We have Alex Jones is running around like a madman filming videos because of our top story today, John Bolton being raided by the FBI. We got a lot more to discuss on top of that. We're going to have Tiffany Cianci in studio with us in the third hour to talk about taking down BlackRock and all of the nefarious moves being made to weaponize your retirement funds against you and what we can do to fight back against that. So lots.
Oh, that's a huge guest.
Tiffany Cianci?
Yeah, so why don't you get me some big excerpts? I'll air that in the fourth hour of my show today.
Absolutely.
I want to get her on. Good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw her at Ron Paul's birthday.
Are you guys not excited about the Bolton thing?
It's very exciting. It's just too early for me to be excited. It's a calm happiness right now.
You're a nighttime guy.
I'm a nighttime guy.
We're talking about you switching to a nighttime show soon.
That would be glorious, honestly. Yeah. I think it'd be better for everybody.
Yeah. Well, we love you. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you very much.
That shirt.
Well, it's Friday. We got a casual Friday.
I'm joking. It's so horrible. It's good. Hey, I love it.
All right. Well, Tiffany Cianci in the third hour. So, yeah, very exciting stuff. She has been a total powerhouse recently, well,
taking
on BlackRock.
BlackRock. It's happening.
Yeah.
Go, Ken Paxton.
All right, folks. So, yeah, a lot of stuff to come in today's show. We'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Why'd you bring in a chair? Alex, come sit down. All right, Alex is working out. Okay, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 22nd of August, 2025. Patel's FBI raids John Bolton's home in high-profile national security probe. The probe, which is said to involve classified documents, was first launched years ago, but the Biden administration shut it down for political reasons, according to a senior U.S. official. And we actually have similar statements being made about Comey and others, with prosecutors at the time just choosing not to prosecute, choosing not to go after what they themselves acknowledge are crimes committed by people in power, similar to James Comey doing it for Hillary Clinton. They all have each other's backs. But Bolton's credit apparently has run out, and he was raided by the FBI this morning. Bolton's ex-account blasted out a message at 7:32 a.m. criticizing Trump's approach to Russia's war on Ukraine as FBI agents were inside his home. It's unclear whether this was a scheduled post, probably was. And we're going to get very much into this a little bit later and investigate what exactly is behind this. Bolton had previously been accused of including classified information in his 2020 book, The Room Where It Happened was the name of his book. President Trump fought to quash its publication over its inclusion of national secrets, saying Bolton broke an NDA signed as a condition of his employment, but he was ultimately unsuccessful in that attempt. His first term Justice Department opened an inquiry into the book in September 2020. Now it's all come to a head. Again, we'll look into this as to whether this is just the beginning of a much larger series of sweeps. I did enjoy waking up this morning to Roger Stone bragging to Bolton, basically saying, how does it feel? Of course, Bolton didn't get the full Roger Stone treatment. They didn't have CNN waiting outside of his house to film the whole thing live to get that, you know, humiliating video on top of everything else. So he didn't get the full Roger Stone treatment. But we'll see. Haul him in front of Congress, ask him a bunch of questions that he probably doesn't know the answer to. And if he ever slips up even a little bit, try to throw him in jail for a couple years. I say give him the full Roger Stone, only this time actually bad people who actually committed crimes. So a little different in that regard as well. Meanwhile, Trump administration pausing issuance of visas for foreign truck drivers, Rubio says. On August 21st, 2025, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio declared an immediate suspension of all worker visa issuances for commercial truck drivers entering the United States. The decision to pause visas was prompted by a deadly August 12 crash in Florida involving Harjinger Singh, a Indian national and undocumented immigrant who faces charges related to the deaths of three individuals in the incident. This, of course, caused a lot of fury and outrage. And really just increased and maximized the fury and outrage being felt by people here in America and Canada, seeing all these 18-wheeler crashes, or not even crashes, just it happened over the winter where there were all of these truck drivers from India who were given CDLs despite not actually qualifying for them, who'd never driven on ice before and were just causing massive pileups everywhere. So this has been a issue of concern for a while, but this crash in particular was one of the more egregious and horrifying examples of the, I almost said unintended consequences, but are they unintended or is this just a little bonus on top of the, you know, policies people are taking to destroy the United States from the inside out? Meanwhile, from ground.news, famine in Gaza officially declared for the first time by UN-backed monitor. A UN-backed global hunger monitor confirmed famine in Gaza governorate on Friday, affecting half a million people amid ongoing conflict. The famine follows nearly 2 years of war triggered by Hamas attacks on October 7th. With Israel controlling all access to Gaza, aid agencies warn conditions will worsen as famine is projected to spread to Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis, with many children suffering severe malnutrition. So for the first time, the UN has officially declared this as a famine, meaning that starvation is at crisis level. The designation increases calls for Israel to expand the flow of humanitarian assistance amid the ongoing disagreements over causes and delivery challenges of aid. Again, we will get back into that. Israel is mounting their Gaza offensive and struggling to man the ranks in this case.
You know what I thought was really weird? I just have to comment on this. I never do during your dispatch. But if you were on X yesterday, you may have noticed that there were so many influencers who had recently visited the Gaza Strip and or Israel and were saying that it's all a complete lie. This famine stuff is all a complete lie. Behind me is all of this aid that Hamas won't distribute.
I think I'm seeing the disconnect here.
And it just reeks of a paid campaign.
Well, it is a paid campaign, right? This is, Israel said, we're bringing a bunch of influencers to Israel to see what it's really like on the ground. And then they show these gigantic warehouses full of unopened aid that hasn't been delivered to anybody. And it's like, that's not helping. It's not actually aid
delivered to anybody. It's Hamas. Yeah, it's like Hamas isn't alive to distribute the aid.
Well, and we'll get into this a little bit later as well, because Konstantin Kissin, and on his podcast, he just had Netanyahu, and he actually confronted Netanyahu with a question about supporting Hamas when they were basically duking out with the Palestinian Authority, and showing receipts showing that up until literally a couple weeks, 2 weeks before October 7th, the head of Mossad was in Gaza delivering aid to Hamas to keep them propped up, because the whole thing is a gigantic series of false flags, you could say, with this intended outcome of ethnically dispossessing the Palestinians. And so we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that in just a little bit. And I did see some of those videos from the influencers being given the, I guess, what would it be, a Potemkin aid site, the Potemkin distribution center is what it would be. Meanwhile, quote, they stole $550 million from me. Trump celebrates overturned penalty in Letitia James's fake civil fraud case. A New York appeals court threw out a massive civil fraud penalty against President Trump on Thursday in New York Attorney General Letitia James's case. Trump says, we are having a lot of victory. I had a victory today. You know, they stole $550 million from me with a fake case, and it was overturned. They said this was a fake case, a terrible thing, but it's a nice victory, you know? I love reading Trump's statements. They just do not sound like anything other than him. It's like it's impossible to read a Trump quote without wanting to do an impression of him. You know, such a distinct way of talking. So, again, the frauds that have been perpetrated against the president and the American people, it seems like finally
coming to an end and being reversed, and the people who pulled them off are actually being held to account for it. I don't want to get too excited, but certainly a dawn raid of John Bolton is a good way to start a Friday morning. And finally, we have this. Prosecutors secured evidence Comey authorized classified leaks, but declined charges. They declined charges. And, I reference it so much. We should probably grab the video of James Comey and Hillary Clinton. And, I don't know if this is a perspective thing, if this is a, subjective view. But personally, I just like so distinctly remember that moment. I was at my grandparents' house in Colorado with my whole family. And, everybody's talking about the election. It was just the hottest part of the election. Well, it must have been June, right? Or July, summertime, 2016, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump duking it out. Russia collusion was on everybody's mind. And it was just, insanity after insanity. WikiLeaks were coming out and Seth Rich was being killed. I mean, it was just crazy stuff happening. And the whole time there's this underlying investigation of Hillary Clinton's emails that we're all waiting to see the outcome of, knowing that what she did was illegal, and it wasn't even questionable. Like, it wasn't even really a question. I mean, she had the server that she wasn't supposed to have. She was doing business on it. She wasn't supposed to be doing sharing classified information with people who didn't have clearance. So we were waiting for the outcome of that, only to have James Comey get up and say, yes, she broke the law. Yes, Hillary Clinton broke the law. Yes, she had an illegal server. So we don't even know what law she broke because we didn't have access to the files that we should have, and we're not going to prosecute her. And I just remember the feeling of shock. Like, my whole family, my parents, my sister, my grandparents, all just sitting there going, what are we hearing? What is this? What is happening? He's getting up there. He's saying, yes, she broke the law, but I'm not going to prosecute because I can't prove she intended to break the law. Okay, so she just set up an offsite, insecure email server in a bathroom somewhere. Her VIP is on Reddit asking people, tech guy is on Reddit asking, he's going, I'm work for a very VIP and I need to securely delete hard drives forever so nobody can forensically investigate it. What should I use? People are like, Bleach Bit's pretty good. And then they use Bleach Bit. I mean, we had her dead to rights, and James Comey just decided not to prosecute her. So I'm getting a little flashbacks of that. I wonder if this wasn't a little quid pro quo operation going on, because apparently you have the same thing happening with James Comey himself, committing a similar crime to that he let Hillary Clinton get away with. Declassified bombshell FBI memo undercuts Comey's testimony to Congress and opens door to new conspiracy probe. Federal prosecutors gathered evidence from James Comey's top lieutenants that he authorized the leak of classified information to reporters just before the 2016 election, but declined to bring criminal charges, according to recently declassified memos that call into question the former FBI director's testimony to Congress. The bombshell revelations involving ex-FBI General Counsel James Baker and ex-Comey Chief of Staff James Rabicki were memorialized in documents that FBI Director Kash Patel discovered earlier this year, but the passages were originally redacted by the Justice Department in versions sent to Congress earlier this month. Attorney General Pam Bondi intervened and eliminated the redactions, dispatching new versions of the memo this week to the House and Senate Judiciary Committees, official told Just the News. The memos detail evidence and interviews gathered by U.S. Postal Inspection Service agents concerning classified information leaked to the New York Times in October 2016 ahead of the November election in which Republican Donald Trump defeated Democrat Hillary Clinton. The USPIS investigation also revealed Baker disclosed USG, United States government, classified information to the New York Times under the belief that he was ultimately instructed and authorized to do so by then FBI Director James Comey. One summary memo reads, for example, during interviews, Baker indicated FBI Chief of Staff James Rabicki instructed him, Baker, to disclose the information to the New York Times, and Baker understood Rabicki was conveying the instruction and authorization from Comey. And then you have Comey getting up and going, I never leaked anything. No, I didn't leak anything. I didn't say to release classified information. I just winked really obviously at Rabicki, and then he went and told old what's-his-name, and then it happened to get leaked. But I didn't have anything to do with it. So I see RICO charges in the future. I mean, this sounds like a criminal conspiracy to me. Sounds like people working together behind the scenes in secret to leak classified information to the New York Times to achieve political ends. When's he going to be in jail? When is the FBI raid of Director James Comey going to happen. I mean, for the love of God, the man is already posting obvious death threats against Trump by shaping seashells like a middle school girl. So, I mean, what are we doing here? We'll be excited when James Comey himself is held to account for all of the criminality he both has allowed and actively participated in. That's your Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. I believe the Shilajit Complex gummies are still on sale, where you buy one of these really amazing packages of gummies, and it's absolutely full. 60 servings per bottle, and they're all incredibly powerful. But I believe if you get this, you get 50% off any other supplement. At least that was the sale yesterday. It's hard to keep up. Regardless, you're going to want to go to TheAlexJonesStore.com and look around for what is the latest offer being advertised. The VIP Club, of course, always gets you additional benefits, and all of your purchases help to put you in the running to win one of the incredible cars and join us here in the InfoWars studio, which is always so much fun. I really enjoyed getting to meet and watch, what were they calling, Patriotic Grandma, something like that. The woman that won last time was awesome, was like, you know, a reminder of who we do this show for and who's out there supporting us with their hard-earned money. We really do appreciate it, and we just hope to be worthy of it by delivering you all of this news in a way that is not designed to befuddle and confuse you, as the way that most mainstream media is. Speaking of that, we not only do our incredible live shows every single day with the most talented crews in the business, who we probably don't show enough appreciation for, but also, of course, the great content creators we have behind the scenes, such as Darren McBreen at Media Arrival. He put together a little celebration of the modern world, I guess you could say. Clip number 4, you can find and share this on his X account at Media Arrival. Here's Darren McBreen's little ode to Idiocracy. Let's watch.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. America! Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized and more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down.
Every time a hurricane or storm's coming, the gas stations just fill up with women with plastic bags they get inside, and then they put the gas in and then wonder why the gas eats through it and spills, and they just don't know. Now look at this woman spraying gasoline on top of the car. This is not a joke. She thinks that's how you clean your car, and she's got her mask on.
So let me get this straight. She's black. She's Indian. He's a reverend. He's a hero. And this guy is a woman?
I'm gonna grow a magnificent pair of breasts.
So that means that this is a peaceful protest. And this is a deadly insurrection. This guy's a white supremacist. And this guy won the election.
The economy was in a state of deep neglect. A great dust bowl had ravaged food supplies. And the number one movie in the country was called Ass.
And that's the Secretary of Health.
So stupid.
Today could be your lucky day. California's first vaccine lottery drawing takes place tonight.
That's right. You can win $1 million.
Get vaccinated. Enjoy your
extra big-ass fries.
You're saying I can get this? Two delicious fries? But there's also a burger element to this?
Joints for jabs, that's what they're calling it. Free joints today to those who could prove they got the COVID vaccine.
Do something smart. Yeah.
The answer is mass formation psychosis.
Did you just make that up?
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
You're the smartest guy in the world. You're pretty dumb sometimes.
I'm kind of retarded.
There you go, Darren McBreen's Media Rivals. Oh, yeah. he's got a whole bunch on the end. You know Darren was trying to fit. He was trying to fit all these into the video, and he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to put them all. really great stuff at Media Rival. Make sure to share that video so we can at least, I mean, at the very least, laugh at a little bit of the absurdity going on. Because there's a lot to scream and cry and yell about, but it's also very funny from a certain perspective. And indeed, that's the perspective we're going to take, especially when it comes to the likes of Mustache Man himself, John Bolton, being raided at 6 a.m. this morning by the FBI, hauled out into the driveway in his underwear. And thus begins the long and arduous journey towards justice. Let's look at some of the... I've compiled some of the, well, I don't know if they're the best, but they're certainly my favorite reactions to this online. I put a couple videos in there as well. We may have to get to in the second segment. But of course, Roger Stone at Roger J. Stone Jr. Good morning, John Bolton. How does it feel to have your home raided at 6 o'clock in the morning? Wait, where was CNN? So you know Roger Stone is enjoying that. How many examples of, really good revenge happening these days? Again, complain all you want about Donald Trump, and we do, about some of the choices that his administration is making. There is some very powerful vindication that's been going on since he got started. Not only the pardons for the likes of the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, Joe Biggs, and others, but Ross Ulbricht, and now they're the people who put them in jail and tried to destroy their lives, now have the eye of justice turned towards them, including Letitia James having her fake trial thrown out, and hopefully she ends her career in just utter disgrace, and maybe goes to jail too, because apparently all of these people, I mean, Adam Schiff, Letitia James, there's some woman yesterday that was busted for this as well, they all are running these like mortgage fraud schemes where they say that they're permanent residence is in a state that they don't actually live in to get tax breaks and, you know, better rates on their mortgage. They all do this. All these people that are all like multi-millionaires are all trying to save like $100,000 by lying on their mortgage applications, and they're all getting busted for it. But, you know, this is who these people are. It's like everything in their life is like a little bit criminal. It's all like a little bit bending their rules and taking advantage and trying to get away with stuff. And they all know it about each other, so they all blackmail on each other. And that's what we call democracy. That's democracy, apparently. That's what we're hearing. Brianna Morello posted this at Brianna Morello. Donald Trump just posted this on Truth Social after Bolton had his home raided. Make America great again. Very simple. So, you know, sort of like when he, you know, took out Soleimani. Just throw up the set, throw up the American flag. Just let them all know. Let them all know what happens when you mess with America. Finally, we're getting back to that. Of course, Patel and Bongino are celebrating this. FBI Director Cash Patel and Deputy Director Dan Bongino both tweet, While the raid was going down at former National Security Advisor John Bolton's house, with Dan Bongino saying public corruption will not be tolerated, and FBI Director Cash Patel saying no one is above the law, FBI agents on mission. On mission, on target, and destroying them all. The redheaded libertarian, I think, had the funniest response. Feds, knock, knock. John Bolton, who's there? Feds, war with Iran. John Bolton, really? Feds, just kidding, out with your hands up, sir. Just kidding, hands behind your head, sir. Onto your knees, follow orders, and this will all go easily. It's a beautiful thing. War with Iran, really? No, get on the ground. We'll be right back.
While the concept of tinfoil hats as a defense against mind control may sound far-fetched, there's a nugget of truth in their effectiveness for blocking certain electromagnetic signals. Tinfoil hats, when properly constructed, can act as a rudimentary electromagnetic shield. They work on the principle that metal can reflect or absorb electromagnetic radiation, including radio waves and microwaves. Some conspiracy theories suggest that these types of signals are used for mind control or surveillance. Mind control is profoundly concerning because it infringes upon an individual's autonomy and freedom of thought. It involves manipulative tactics or technologies that can coerce or influence a person's beliefs, decisions, and actions against their will. This intrusion into one's cognitive and emotional processes undermines their ability to make independent choices and shapes their behavior in ways that may run counter to their values and interests.
And of course, you know where tinfoil hats come from? In the 50s and 60s, the Russians would blast our embassies with different types of radiation and microwaves. They started lining them with tin at first. It was actually tin, not aluminum. Old days, tin foil was tin, the metal tin, not oil. And then they would also line it with lead. So these wives' tale things, or these things we make jokes out of, we're not actually selling this to you to protect you from 5G. It really won't do that. I would imagine the studies, some of it bounces off, but not much because it shoots through everything. It's why it's so dangerous. And we've shown you the footage of plants won't even grow in 5G, plus just the regular Wi-Fi in your house. They've done university studies. But it's a lot of fun. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. You can make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hats with this bad boy. And it is a lot of fun. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Absolute style. Look how easy it was to make that. And now CNN cannot mind control me. And, you know, you can make it cooler. You can add all sorts of stuff to it. Here, I can make a Viking helmet. That looks pretty cool. Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. There you go. Look how fast that was. Now you're ready for the Halloween party coming up. Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit. Well, now we're ready. And it is a lot of fun, and it supports the broadcast. And in 1995, it's a good deal. Hell, this much tinfoil costs you like $15 at the store. So this is an amazing deal, thealexjonesstore.com. So get your Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Well, I'm a tinfoil hat wearing, meat-eating son of a gun, loving sun, loving hot-blooded Texian, two-stepping, outlaw free, one looking for a little fun.
The official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit, 100% lifetime guarantee, high-quality aluminum. Got the famous shot of me there with the aluminum hat. 50 square feet, 100% lifetime guarantee. Protect your mind from the globalist. I love the idea they had of an Alex Jones stress ball. People really love it. That's available. You know, fun little things. Not just the widest selection of Patriot t-shirts and ball caps and hoodies and sweaters, but cool stuff like this. But now we have the official Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit. Alex Jones tinfoil hat kit now at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I personally would like to thank the Justice Department for finally giving me something to cover. It's a common thing that really big breaking news stories always happen around 11:02 a.m. They always happen about 2 minutes after I go off air, some big breaking news story happens. So a big thanks to the Justice Department and the FBI for doing this so early in the morning so we get to cover it first and right off the bat. It's the FBI raid of John Bolton's home in classified documents probe. So this is all about the classified documents that John Bolton apparently had, but it also goes back to the Mar-a-Lago raid on Donald Trump. There's the red link on Drudge. FBI raids John Bolton's home, national security probe. Now, as we read earlier in the New York Post exclusive, Bolton's X account blasted out a message at 7:32 a.m., criticizing Trump's approach to the Russian war on Ukraine as FBI agents were inside his home. And it says it's unclear if this was a scheduled post. It probably was, but I prefer to imagine it wasn't. I mean, look, if there's one thing you can say about John Bolton, the man has commitment. I mean, he's committed to looking like a cartoon version of himself for the last 30 years. That's commitment right there. And he is so committed to
mongering war across the world. He's so committed to starting gigantic conflicts that kill a million people for no discernible purpose that even as he's being raided by the FBI, he's like frantically tweeting out more things to try to keep the war with Ukraine going. I mean, you got to admire the commitment. You got it. I'm picturing him like being hauled off by FBI agents. He's just like frantically, wait, no, I must try to start one more war as he's being hauled off. And literally he's just like mad that peace is happening. Hopefully, God willing, this is the last tweet he ever does out of his just demented, sickening mind. And if so, this would be an appropriate epitaph for his career. He wrote, quote, Russia has not changed its goal. Drag Ukraine into a new Russian empire. Moscow has demanded that Ukraine cede territory it already holds and the remainder of Donetsk, which it has been unable to conquer. Zelensky will never do so. Meanwhile, meetings will continue because Trump wants a Nobel Peace Prize, but I don't see these talks making any progress. You can almost hear how happy he is at that perspective. He's like, the peace talks are stalling. More war. It'll never end. No, we're going to end your influence, you evil, evil man. And by the way, this is John Bolton falling for the trap that Trump laid almost a decade ago and that we told you about. Remember when Donald Trump first brought John Bolton into his administration, his first administration? Everybody was furious. Everybody was freaking out. Why the hell is he bringing this warmonger in? John Bolton stands for everything we're against. And of course, Donald Trump told you why he was doing it. He was like, hey, you bring John Bolton to a meeting, people get scared. They know, like, literally, they're like, we're using his well-earned reputation as a violent, psychopathic warmonger to get what we want. You bring a rabid dog to a negotiation. So he was being used as a prop by Donald Trump. Very funny. But also, he was required, as a condition of his employment, to sign certain NDAs and make certain agreements that, you know, I remember talking about at the time, going, guys, don't worry. He's not going to listen to Bolton. He's using Bolton for his own ends, and he's putting Bolton in a position where Bolton's not going to be able to be a lobbyist. He's not going to be able to, you know, write books about this stuff. Now, he violated that NDA and wrote the book anyway, and this is all coming to a culmination with the 6 a.m. raid on his home by the FBI. So that's the trap he laid. And I remember talking about it at the time. And apparently it's come to fruition. It worked. The trap worked because you know that John Bolton was going to push the bounds as far as he possibly could, push the envelope of legality to its breaking point. Again, just try to get that sweet, sweet war. That's how I picture John Bolton, is like a crazed drug addict whose drug is the blood of the innocent and wars overseas. He feasts off contracts to the military-industrial complex. And he's grown bloated and turgid from all of his gorging. Bolton has previously been accused of including classified information in his 2020 book called The Room Where It Happened. President Trump fought to quash its publication over inclusions of national secrets, saying Bolton broke an NDA signed as a condition of his employment, but was ultimately unsuccessful. His first term Justice Department opened an inquiry into the book in September 2020. The ex-Trump advisor had been at odds with his old boss since, regularly appearing on cable news, criticizing the Trump's national security and foreign policy. Which again, I mean, these are the enemies you want to have. These are the criticisms that reflect, you know, positive developments. Because when John Bolton is criticizing your foreign policy and national security, what that means is you're not starting wars overseas for the benefit of, I don't know, John Bolton's bizarre fetish. It's like he has a fetish. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. It comes a day after Patel revealed former FBI Director James Comey had authorized leaks of classified documents while misleading Congress. Just before the 2016 election, Patel has pledged to rid the federal government of corruption and expose cover-up. So again, this is very good to see. It's sort of in a way low-hanging fruit, right? Because for one thing, John Bolton is theoretically, technically a Republican, so you don't have the issue of they're just going after their political opponents. He's also doesn't have an official position, as far as I know, in any, you know, intelligence community, government operation, right? I think the last thing he did was serve as an advisor to Donald Trump. So you're not having to break any like interagency problems. You don't have to send the CIA to arrest the FBI or vice versa, which is going to be a problem with James Comey, because as much as these institutions keep telling us how, you know, legit they are and how they're just there to serve America and nobody's above the law, it's a little bit of an ask to go, hey, will you go arrest your old boss? Will you go arrest the guy that still holds incredible influence and sway in this organization? That might be a little bit of a more difficult hurdle to get over, but I really hope that this raid on John Bolton is the beginning of a much larger campaign of arrest for the American traitors that have brought us to the brink of destruction. We can go to a video now. This is the raid itself. I'm getting some conflicting information. According to some people, John Bolton wasn't even at his house when this raid happened, but there were also reports that he was in his underwear outside his house. So, yeah, we don't really have any confirmation one way or the other, but we'll bring you all the updates as they come. But we'll first go to clip number 17 here. John Bolton's house raided this morning by the FBI.
The probe dropped when Joe Biden became president. So is this picking up where that left off, David?
It's possible. I don't know with 100% certainty, but it is notable, guys, that John Bolton, Ambassador Bolton's security clearances were stripped earlier this year by President Trump. Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, took that security clearance away. They had concerns. The administration had concerns about Ambassador Bolton still being able to access some of these documents and have some of those security clearances. It's also notable that John Bolton had a security detail as well. Because of the threats from Iran on his life, that security detail, that government federal paid security detail, was also taken away by President Trump.
So we have more here from Newsmax. FBI agents raided the home of former National Security Advisor John Bolton early Friday as part of a high-profile national security investigation. A source confirmed to Newsmax that the investigation is focused on the handling of classified documents. Bolton was not detained and has not been charged with any crime, said the person who was not authorized to discuss the investigation by name and spoke to the Associated Press on the condition of anonymity. Messages left with a spokesperson for Bolton and the White House were not immediately returned. A lawyer who represented Bolton had no immediate comment. The Justice Department had also had no comment, but leaders appeared to cryptically refer to the search of Bolton's home in a series of social media posts Friday morning. And we read those to you, like Cash Patel saying no one's above the law, FBI agents on a mission, Pam Bondi sharing that post saying America's safety is not negotiable, justice will be pursued always, with FBI Director Dan Bongino also sharing this post saying public corruption will not be tolerated. The search of Bolton's home comes as the Trump administration has taken steps to examine the activities of other perceived adversaries of the Republican president. Okay, are we going to have to do some editing here? We're going to have to do some editing here for this just when we can glean the truth from the lies. The search of Bolton Homes comes to the Trump administration has taken steps to examine the activities of other perceived adversaries of the Republican president, including by authorizing a grand jury investigation. We can just Republican president. We can replace that with American people. Okay, so that's who they're the enemies of. They're not Trump's personal enemies, right? This isn't him going after Rosie O'Donnell. All right, this is John Bolton, war criminal. Okay, man who has led us into disastrous conflict after disastrous conflict, leaving uncounted dead in his wake. This is not Donald Trump's personal adversary. This is an adversary to humanity and America and peace the world over. Okay, so show some appreciation, Newsmax. Including by authorizing a grand jury investigation into the origins of the Trump-Russia probe, officials are also conducting mortgage fraud investigations into Democratic Senator Adam Schiff of California, New York Attorney General Letitia James, who brought a civil fraud suit against Trump and his company, and ex-Trump prosecutor Jack Smith faces an investigation from an independent watchdog office. Schiff and James have vigorously denied any wrongdoing through their lawyers, which is nice, but the wrongdoing is in fact proven in documents they themselves signed. Okay, so that's actually not a question, and they can say whatever the hell they want. The media should probably report it accurately. Schiff and James have vigorously denied that which is evidenced in documents they themselves affixed their signature to, so who cares? In an ABC interview earlier this month, Bolton was asked about whether he was worried about the Trump administration taking action against him. Bolton said Trump had already come after him by taking away his security detail and added, "I think it's a retribution presidency." Well, you would think that you're the criminal. So obviously criminals are going to, you know, portray it like that, but you are a criminal. So this is good. It's not great. I'm going to say right here, it's not enough. This is a very good start to the events, but where does it go from here? What are the charges being laid? When is he going to be, you know, put in handcuffs? When is James Comey going to be arrested for lying to Congress? When are they going to get the full Roger Stone treatment, not the half measure? Because, I mean, we're traveling down the spectrum. We're headed down the spectrum towards justice. This is one step closer. We still got a little ways to go. Right on one end of the spectrum, you have what it was before, where not only crimes not being investigated, certainly not being punished, and not even being acknowledged by anybody in any position of power, including the mainstream media. That's where sort of we were with Biden, was the criminals themselves had the key to the jail and were trying desperately to shove Donald Trump into a cell. Since then, we've moved forward a little bit. The investigations have started, which is good. It's good. It's not great. Now the investigations are bearing fruit. Raids of the FBI, gathering documents, also good. The next step would be the people who have those documents being placed under arrest. Then come the trials, then come the imprisonment, then comes whatever justice demands after that. So we're moving in that direction. We're moving in the correct direction. However, I feel like I got to temper my excitement. As always, it's like we need action. We want action. This is action. So I'm happy about that. But I just feel like I feel like everything that we're doing these days when it comes to politics all has to be observed with the background of, if we don't get it done this administration, and really if we don't get it done before the midterms, the left is going to be absolutely insane. And again, as we look back at the way Letitia James and Jack Smith and James Comey and John Bolton and all of these people were leaking to the press and charging Trump with things he should have never been charged with and investigating him for crimes that they hadn't quite decided on yet, it's a reminder of just how out of control and insane the left was last time when Trump hadn't even done anything to him, really. He'd spent 4 years just trying to keep his head above water and not be impeached over the fact that he was trying to stop a war they were trying to start in Ukraine. And they tried to send him to jail for 500 years and threw 100 of my friends in prison for being at the Capitol on January 6th. So what are they going to do this time? What are they going to do next time if he starts raiding their homes with the FBI and doesn't disable their ability to get back at him once they, you know, get back in office? Now, one good thing that we're seeing and we saw yesterday is Donald Trump signing executive orders to make more secure the election system, the voting system, to get rid of mail-in ballots. That's good, too. Remember, we always invoke the cartoon, sort of explains the third world mindset, where it's like, well, you have a hole in your roof, and when it's raining, the water comes in, but you can't go fix the roof while it's raining. It's raining, you can't go fix the roof. And then when it's not raining, there's no water coming in the hole, so you go, it's not a problem right now, I don't need to fix it. And so you end up never fixing the hole in your roof. That's how it's been with voting, where when they rigged the election in 2020, we didn't have any power to do anything about the way the election system was operating. And then when you win the election, you're like, well, maybe the election's not so bad. Maybe we can just keep things going. We did win after all. So I'm glad Trump is not falling for that feedback loop, that dichotomy, and instead working on actually securing the election system before the midterms, which is necessary because, again, if any of these people ever sniff anywhere near power ever again, they're going to go insane. Like, I don't even know how to express it. They're going to be unleashed, and the media is priming America to accept this and to, you know, celebrate and think it's necessary because, God forbid, Donald Trump supporters ever get what they want by voting for it, right? Good Lord. Bolton served as Trump's third national security advisor for 17 months and clashed with him over Iran, Afghanistan, and North Korea, which you'll notice we don't have wars in any of those places right now. So he failed in whatever mission he was on. He faced scrutiny during Trump's first administration over a book he wrote about his time in government that officials argued disclosed classified information, but the Justice Department in 2021 abandoned its lawsuit and dropped a separate grand jury investigation. John Bolton's lawyer said he moved forward with the book after a White House National Security Council official with whom Bolton had worked for months said the manuscript no longer contained classified information. On his first day back in office this year, Trump revoked the national security clearance of more than four dozen former intelligence officials, including Bolton. Bolton was also among a group of former Trump officials whose security details were canceled by Trump earlier this year. Bolton's scathing book, called The Room Where It Happened, portrayed Trump as grossly ill-informed about foreign policy and said he, quote, saw conspiracies behind rocks and remained stunningly uninformed on how to run the White House, let alone the huge federal government. Friends like these, right? He gives this guy a job, and it's just these people, man. There's something really disturbing about just knowing how brazen these people are and how they will literally be engaged in conspiracies to actively undermine Donald Trump. And then they'll write a book about how bad Trump was at getting a handle on the White House, right? They're sneaking around like rats, whispering in ears, conspiring with each other to undercut Donald Trump. And then they use their own actions against him as evidence of just how incompetent he is. It's like, okay, I'm sorry he's not, you know, doing the perfect breaststroke in a pit of vipers, right? Bolton's scathing book portrayed Trump as grossly ill-informed about foreign policy. But what is the outcome of Donald Trump's policy been? What's the outcome of Donald Trump's grossly ill-informed foreign policy measures? He definitely avoided a setup for a wider war in Syria during his administration. He drew down troops out of the Middle East and ended the incessant fighting there against ISIS by simply fighting them with a will to win rather than perpetuate their existence as a useful proxy force against the Assad regime on behalf of Israel. He avoided the war in Ukraine and tried to do what he could to mitigate that conflict, despite the desires of the people in power at the time to foster war with Russia by all means, including impeaching Trump and launching the Russia investigation in an attempt to destroy his foreign policy. He was the first president ever to actually meet with and enter the demilitarized zone with North Korea. And I'm sorry, what's John Bolton's past? Sorry, what's his CV exactly? How many wars has he started, and what has been the outcome of those? I mean, this is the thing. I mean, it's like you got a guy criticizing a Michelin five-star chef. He's criticizing Jiro from Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Well, meanwhile, he's in prison because the last meal he cooked killed everybody that ate it. Right? I don't know what type, like what drug these people are taking that gives them the unearned confidence that they have, but it's very funny in a way. It's very funny that you have these people who just continually fail at everything they try, assuming that he's trying to increase national security, assuming that at least some of the things he claims to care about or believe in are maybe true a little bit. Like you think he wants America to be more powerful, that he wants our influence overseas to be greater and respected, and that he's managing all of these, upstart world leaders in a deft manner. And it's like you look back at the past, and he looks like a special needs child trying to tie a shoe with a hammer. It doesn't make any sense. He's just smashing things and destroying everything and killing everyone, starting wars that never end for goals that never materialize, spending trillions of dollars and millions of lives. And then he looks down his nose at Donald Trump, Nobel Prize nominee, and says he doesn't understand foreign policy. He doesn't get it like we do. It's like you people, a failure isn't even a word. Like that's not even the correct word. Right. Again, I'm thinking of just like The Simpsons or something where it's like, how hard can it be to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Cut to the kitchen's on fire. The dog is dead. Sprinklers are going off. It's like you cannot mess up this badly if you're genuinely trying to do anything good ever. You have to deliberately be trying to create chaos and misery and succeeding. That's the only explanation that makes sense. You cannot be this bad at simply managing the conflicting desires of world leaders. It just doesn't make any sense. Trump responded by slamming Bolton as a crazy warmonger who would have led the country into World War VI. Oh, my God. How can you not love Trump? That is such a good line. He's like, if we trusted John Bolton, we'd be in the Sixth World War at this point. We'd all be dead. Bolton served as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations under President George W. Bush and also held positions in Ronald Reagan's administration. He also considered running for president in 2016 and 2012. In 2022, an Iranian operative was charged in a plot to kill Bolton in a presumed retaliation for a January 2020 U.S. airstrike that killed the country's most powerful general. Bolton had by then left the Trump administration, but tweeted, "Hope this is the first step to regime change in Tehran." Yeah, no, I bet you do. I bet you do. You know, it's like you got Lindsey Graham, the classic meme. I don't know if the crew can find it. What do they call him? Holden Blood Feast. I mean, I don't know if a more true caricature has ever been drawn of these people. Holden Blood Feast. It's like 99 years old, respectable bipartisan record. Just wants war with Iran. God, please, just one more war before I die. And again, so John Bolton, while the FBI is raiding his home, is tweeting out that he hopes the Russian negotiations fail, that Trump doesn't get the Nobel Prize, because Zelensky will, you know, insist on the war continuing forever. Which, again, let's just, you know, focus on who these people are and how their own projection always illustrates themselves. There he is. Holden Blood Feast, Iowa, 118 years old. Please, God, just let us nuke Iran. Nothing else matters. I'll do anything. Please, I just want to see burning flesh one last time before I die. Respectable bipartisan. It's okay. That's John Bolton, but he doesn't even have a seat. That's John Bolton, but he's not even a congressman. He's just some guy. He's just some dude that presidents occasionally tap on the head and say, hey, you want to go act like an idiot overseas so everybody's scared of us? And he just like a slavering, you know, rabid dog is yanking on the chain. So 7:32 in the morning, he's tweeting out the projection, right? That Donald Trump just wants a Nobel Peace Prize. Just think about that argument. Think about that. It's like, hey, Donald Trump is trying to get peace in Russia and Ukraine, where apparently millions of people have pointlessly lost their lives. And the other guy's like, yeah, but he's only doing that because he wants a Nobel Peace Prize. It's like, okay, what? So, what? Okay, then he should get one. Well, we're not going to let him stop a war. He's just doing it because he loves peace so much. Like, you people are psychos. This is step one. Can't wait for more.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm really interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. Gonna mix this up, and excited to see how this is gonna work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power. What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here, just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past. Doing the one dropper of the ultra methylene blue USP grade, the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm, zen feeling. So
If you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, you'll need to go to the alexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.
Gentlemen, this is the American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Second hour is on. I got a lot still to cover. Obviously, we're keeping up with this John Bolton arrest. I'll be joined in studio by Tiffany Cianci in the third hour. She has been on a tear recently. BlackRock messed with the wrong woman, and now she's got private equity in her sights. And unfortunately, not enough people know about this, but it's one of the things, and I won't spend too much time on it here because I'll save it for talking with her, but it's one of the few things that is so bad. Like, it's so bad in so many different ways, and yet nobody is speaking up about it. And so bills are just sort of going through Congress and nobody's really paying that much attention to, but have huge implications, and no regular person in America would be for it if they knew it was going on. So it's one of these instances where, like, awareness, getting the information out about this can actually change the trajectory of our country. Like, we can actually solve a major issue before it, you know, becomes overwhelming. It just takes attention and action, participation from the audience. So very excited to talk to her and to you fine folks listening to me about what we can all do together to stop this. Now, I just got a lot of sort of one-off stories that I think are interesting. We didn't cover this too much the other day. I think I may have mentioned it, but basically you had a group of boys in a grade school in Loudoun County, Virginia, of all places, right? This place that we use as like an example of a time in which the negative policies of the left are covered up by the left so the policies can continue, despite the fact that the negative consequences that the Republicans, the right wing warn about come true. And they go, we can't have facts and reality that confirm the things the Republicans say. We better hide the horrible damage our policies are doing. It's really been emblematic for that behavior, that mindset that's destroying our country. And so the latest is that a group of boys in grade school in Loudoun County were suspended from school because they objected to a female student in their locker room who identifies as male. But here's the twist to this. As of this morning from Gateway Pundit, amongst them was a Muslim student who was exempted from suspension in Loudoun County locker room case where boys objected to presence of female. So you had a bunch of boys who I guess were like filming a girl in their locker room going, this person isn't a girl. She shouldn't be in this locker room. We don't want to share a locker room with girls. All of the boys got suspended except for the Muslim, because that's his, you know, religious prerogative, because he as a minority protected group is allowed to believe things, not you Christians. So you Christians are technically barely the majority in this country. Therefore, your beliefs don't matter. Therefore, you're not allowed to, you know, have religious opposition to, you know, sexual perversion. This is typical, but completely unacceptable, just completely outrageous. So a group of boys at grade school in Loudoun County, Virginia, were recently suspended from school because they objected to a female student in their locker room who identifies as male. The female student even took pictures in the locker room, but the boys were suspended for objecting. The case, of course, is outrageous. Well, now it's being reported that one of the boys is exempt from the suspension. He happens to be Muslim. In Loudoun County, there were three boys who were involved in the Title IX investigation. Only two were suspended. Why? Because the third boy was Muslim, so the progressive administrators didn't want to punish him. All of their families are united in their anger. So LCPS launched a Title IX investigation against the boys who were caught on video asking the obvious question, why is there a girl in the boys' locker room? There are three boys, two of them suspended for 10 days, a no-contact order with the female student, forced meetings with administrators, and a permanent smear on their academic record that could destroy their college prospects as they have been declared guilty of sexual harassment and sex-based discrimination for saying, ma'am, this is the boys' room, right? But not the Muslim kid. He gets to have beliefs, okay? He gets to have beliefs. He gets his beliefs protected, and it's not hateful, and it's not bigoted when he does it because he's a good Muslim, and they're allowed to disagree with your, you know, sexual morality. But those damn Christians, if they have an objection, it's not, you know, born out of religious conviction. It's because they're bigots and they're hateful and they have to have their lives destroyed as children for daring to believe the things they heard in Sunday school. But not the innocent, beautiful Muslim. No, he's too perfect and good to be hateful.
You just saw an ad for methylene blue. Tell people the short-term effect and then now the long-term effect.
Yeah, it gives you a good energy boost. I use it before I work out. So if I'm going to be doing kettlebell workouts, like I do some methylene blue about a half hour before. Gives you mental focus. I don't crash afterwards. That's good stuff. I need some more.
How fast did it kick in?
About 15, 20 minutes. I take about a half hour before my workout.
And then you're saying you're almost out of the bottle. Was that 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Yeah, something like that. You gave me the liquid and the pills, too.
You're almost out of both?
Yeah, I'm almost out of both.
Oh, my goodness. Well, all right. I'll give you more. Right. For the audience, we can't give it to everybody. We need your support at theauctionstore.com. For me personally, the first week I got on it, I actually started to hurt myself because the workouts were so crazy. My trainer goes, dude, what's going on? Like 3 days into it. I go, I don't know.
I like it better than doing like a five-hour energy shot because those will make you crash afterwards. This doesn't have the crash.
So you've had no crash.
Right.
If you'll just try, you'll be hooked. And we can fund the operation. It's a win-win. Now's the time. Get the methylene blue, bare minimum, theauctionstore.com.
Putting the power of conversation into the caller's hands. You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. Again, our top story today is, of course, the FBI raid on mustache murder man himself, John Bolton. Apparently, he hasn't been arrested. A little bit disturbing, a little bit discomforting, I guess. I mean, you hear FBI raid crack of dawn, you think they are perp walking somebody in handcuffs. Apparently not John Bolton. Apparently he gets a little bit more, appreciation, from law enforcement. I mean, it's not like he's a, Catholic father of 12 who prayed outside of an abortion clinic. In that case, you kick the door down, AR-15s in the wife's face, make her have a miscarriage. I mean, drag the guy into a car in front of his screaming family. That's for the Catholic, protesters who stand outside of abortion clinics. But when you steal classified information to leak it in order to, perpetuate endless wars for the benefit of your own, sick fetishes, then you get a polite call to your lawyer. Hey, we'll be stopping by at 7:30. Make sure John's not in the area so we don't have to have any uncomfortable run-ins with him, would you? So John Bolton goes and gets coffee and starts tweeting out about how evil Donald Trump is for wanting a Nobel Peace Prize while the FBI politely rummages through his documents, I suppose. So no one's above the law, but some people avoid its more stringent measures. In a bombshell of a development, federal agents conducted a raid on the Maryland residence of former National Security Advisor John Bolton on Friday morning, according to various breaking sources. One source connected to the investigation described the search as aimed at potentially classified documents that authorities suspect Bolton may still have in his possession. This, of course, not something he's allowed to do, unlike Donald Trump, who, as president at the time, had ultimate declassification powers. However, at the time that the Mar-a-Lago raid took place, which there's a lot of, speculation about this as well in terms of what the Mar-a-Lago raid was really about, whether they were looking for classified information that Trump wasn't supposed to have, or maybe he had information about crimes that they had carried out, classified or not. They wanted to get their hands on the documents that proved their wrongdoing. There's a lot of speculation, but at the time, John Bolton was there, encouraging this and speaking from the right. This is maybe the worst part about these scumbags. Is they call themselves Republicans. They work for Republican presidents, completely destroying Republicans' reputations and just being the fulfillment of all of the worst stereotypes of like conservative jackass military industrial complex stooges. But people go, people on the right and the left are saying this is what's necessary. I mean, this can't be a partisan thing. They're not going after Trump just because he's a political enemy, because even allies like John Bolton are acknowledging that this was necessary and lawful. And it's like, that's really the worst part about these pretend allies. as they give credence to your enemy's actions because they're a snake in the grass. They're an enemy in your camp. Clip 18 here is John Bolton throwing oil on the fire of the Mar-a-Lago raid all the way back when that happened illegally under Joe Biden. Let's watch.
Any given moment. But I don't think he cared about the classification system. I don't think he appreciated the sensitivity of this information. And he didn't appreciate the sensitivity of how it was often acquired, the so-called sources and methods. So this had been briefed to him before I arrived. It was repeated frequently. I think it simply had no impact on him whatever.
There's a couple of different ways that people think about this, and people who are not friendly to the president, who think about what's happened here. And one of them is, you know, Donald Trump, master thief, you know, criminal, running some kind of elaborate conspiracy to bring things out of the White House and keep them secret, for potentially for political or financial gain. There are other people who add it to attitude is Trump is chaotic, he's careless, he's not that smart. He took these things almost by mistake, and now he's basically stamping his feet and saying, they're mine, I don't want to give them up. Give me a sense of where you think the truth lies with respect to Trump's intelligence, carelessness, and the degree to which he might have brought motive to bear on taking these documents out of the White House and keeping them for this long at Mar-a-Lago.
Well, it's very hard to speculate on motive other than that he liked cool things. He saw things that he wanted to take them, and he was pretty much able to take them, and not just on classified information matters, on all kinds of things that crossed his desk. Some days he liked to eat a lot of French fries. Some days he took classified documents. He wanted them. Why did he want them? Because he could get them.
Right.
Yeah, he's just like a child, right? I mean, it's just like Donald Trump is just like, oh, a piece of paper, that's cool, I'll keep that. Sometimes he's eating French fries, sometimes he gets distracted by jingling keys. It's like, I guess if you believe the crap you've heard about Trump for the last 10 years, it's just a piling on top of the lies, right? As we've talked about a million times, when you're arguing about Trump, you're not even arguing about whatever you're arguing about. You're arguing about 10 years of indoctrination these people have gone through to set them up to believing that Trump is simultaneously super evil and devious and gets away with everything and is coordinating in this super sophisticated manner with people overseas, that despite the fact that the FBI and a private investigator and his enemies all over the world, they can't ever get anything on him. He's Teflon Don. He skirts their, you know, attempts to frame him constantly. But somehow he's also a bumbling idiot that's a child that just, like, is doing things without even knowing the reason he's doing them. He thought the papers were cool. That was John Bolton's argument right there, is Donald Trump must have had classified documents because he thought they were cool. Because he thought the documents were cool and just wanted to keep them like a kid picking up a snail shell off the sidewalk. These people think you're stupid. These people really, really think that they're hot crap and that they can say whatever the hell they want and that you'll buy it because you're an idiot. Genuinely, I feel disrespected by John Bolton trying to feed me that line of crap, of utter and complete crap. Now, one thing I always do think about when it comes to Donald Trump and the having of classified documents is this story from CNN all the way back in 2023. Exclusive, Trump captured on tape talking about classified document he kept after leaving the White House. Yeah, a couple things about this. For one, they have him on tape, right? Just imagine Trump probably 24/7, like everybody he's ever around. If it's a group more than like two people, if it's not like his wife and J.D. Vance, and J.D. Vance may even have a recording device on him, but like somebody's going to be recording everything he says on the off chance that they can send that tape to the New York Times and destroy his life over it. So, like, that's how he's been living for the last 10 years at least, and yet they've never gotten anything on him. In this case, what they got on him, talking about the classified documents, was him saying, look at this plan for war with Iran they delivered to me. They wanted me to okay this. They wanted me to sign off on war with Iran during my first administration. Can you believe the gall of these warmongering psychos? That's what he's on tape saying, paraphrasing, more or less. That's, he's showing a war plan. Now, his Joint Chiefs of Staff came to him. So, sir, we think now is the right time to launch Operation Die for Israel, okay? War with Iran is necessary and we want you to be the champion to lead us to victory against our greatest foes. And he's like, no, I don't want to go to war with Iran. Later is showing these documents going, can you believe these psychos wanted me to go with war with Iran? And then the story that comes out of that is he was talking about classified documents, a bombshell, smoking gun, Trump on tape talking about classified documents. Okay, but he was talking about the fact that the people in the Pentagon were trying to start a war with Iran. Can you imagine what the world would be like today if Donald Trump really was the child that they portray him as? If he really was just going along with whoever was the latest person to talk to him, then he would have started a war with Iran, which would have made the war with Iraq look like a cakewalk. I mean, we'd be 9 years into a 45-year conflict at this point. God only knows how many soldiers would have died. God only knows what untold amounts of death would have stained the deserts of the Middle East red with blood. I mean, God forbid these people ever get their way again. And thank God Donald Trump is there to stand up against him. But oh no, he's got a classified document. He's the president and can declassify whatever he wants. So just a reminder of like the words, the documents that they were looking for in Mar-a-Lago was like evidence that they were trying to start wars on behalf of a foreign state. So I have a bit of a different perspective, I guess. I guess my stack of things I care about is a little bit different than their own. Now, back in January, Bolton had been among former top officials and Trump adversaries to get their costly security protections stripped. Axios also recalls that Bolton wrote in a foreword to his memoir that was published last year the words, "A mountain of facts demonstrates that Trump is unfit to be president." Publications of the book have been delayed so the White House could review its content for any potential security breaches or disclosure of sensitive information. Bolton was vocal in his criticism of the president after working in the first Trump administration. Trump aggressively used his power of the presidency to punish political foes. Because everything has to be, all of Trump's motivations have to be suspect, right? He's trying to stop a war. Well, only because he wants a Nobel Peace Prize for himself. Okay, and? My God. So just because John Bolton has classified documents that he's not supposed to have in his personal possession and he's using them strategically to frustrate the peace conference that Trump's going through with Vladimir Putin. So what? He's just trying to punish his political enemies. Again, completely open and shut case here. I mean, we got John Bolton as just one of like 300 people that previously worked for the American government. They shouldn't just have their houses raided by the FBI. They should all be in handcuffs, and we just pray that this is the start of a much larger campaign of justice being wrought by the Trump administration. Now, like I said, I have a bunch of other stories to get to. Some people are saying this is a distraction from Epstein. I think multiple things can happen at once. And maybe this is a good time to reference this. I thought this post is something I talked about quite a bit, but the way this guy phrased it is, I think, accurate and shows I'm not the only one thinking this. Of course, the way he portrays it is not exactly how I would, but the point is from somebody named Garfield Bot at Robert Lasagna One. There are two ways we get out of this. One is billions of dead, oceans of blood, and continents turned to dust. The other involves being a little mean and saying no to women sometimes. I don't know if saying no to women is the right way to put it, but saying no to people playing on your empathy and your more, I guess you could put it, female emotions, playing on your motherly instincts. And like that's what we're dealing with here, which is why it's so frustrating, why I get so frustrated at the lack of action from Donald Trump and his administration up till this point. It's like, these are our options. Either these evil people stay in power, in which case things get worse and worse and worse to a breaking point where they're starting the Third World War because it's in line with all of their other plans, or the people get to such a point of desperation that we have to fight back and it just all goes completely insane and justice denied to us through the official channels have to be achieved through unofficial means. Or we can just do normal things and just not fall for the lies. Or just win 10 million, South Americans say we'd like to come in, we just go, no. God, we get that you really, but the answer's no. So thanks for asking. Okay. And that's it. And then it's like problem solved. Okay. So these are our options. All right. Either like the systems that we rely on for survival start to degrade and to collapse and everything gets worse and worse and we have to rebuild from dust after the Third World War wipes out 90% of the population, or we can just say no to the evil people who want to do bad things and then call you mean for not letting them. You just got to get called mean, folks. That's the other option, and I'll take that. Okay, so they can just call us mean, and we can just keep surviving and living and thriving and succeeding. Or we can try not to be mean and collapse under a demographic tidal wave that's consuming us all. And this is kind of part of it. Trump administration ramps up crackdown on U.S. visa holders. The Trump administration said Thursday is reviewing more than 55 million people who have valid U.S. visas for any violations that could lead to deportation, part of a growing crackdown on foreigners who are permitted to be in the United States. 55 million people are here on visa, which is just really kind of an unbelievable number. That's one of the, Trump's whole mission as a politician, if there's one thing that's come out of it for me, it's like first realizing what a big deal the illegal immigration was. So I remember back in 2016, you hear from like the libertarians, like, what's the big deal? This is oppression. People should be able to move wherever they want. And you're like, yeah, it kind of makes sense. And then you hear Trump talk about it and you go, well, wait, no, this is actually a huge problem. This is crazy, actually. How has this not been the focus for a lot longer? How have we allowed this to happen? So for me, realizing during Trump's first campaign in 2016, like what a big deal illegal immigration was, I was always against it, but, realizing what a priority it needed to be. But then, the recent revelation has been like just how prevalent H-1B visas and their abuse is, how bad the legal immigration system is with corporations using it to undercut American wages relentlessly, continuously, and deliberately. But now also, just the sheer number of legal immigrants we have, it's just like, what is the maximum? How much can we bear? I mean, we probably have 50 million illegal immigrants. We got 55 million visa holders. God only knows how many H-1B applicants we have or overstays. And it's like, we only have 330 million people in this country. That's already like 150 million people I've listed that aren't American that are living here. So what the hell is going on? You grow up an American thinking everybody's American like you. Are half of the people I meet not American? Am I going crazy? How are there this many foreigners living in our country? What the hell? Why do we allow this? So I think just give me the list. It'll take me a while. 55 million is a lot, but I'll get through it fast. If I can't pronounce it on the first try, they're out. All right. Their names are pronounceable to me. We won't kick them out. I'm not going to say they get to stay. I'm just saying that they don't immediately get expelled. But I think if it takes me more than about a second to read your name, you're out, buddy. Since Trump took office, the administration is focused on deporting migrants illegally in the United States, as well as holders of student and visa exchange, visitor exchange visas. State Department's new language suggests that continual vetting process will occur, which officials knowledge is time consuming, far more widespread, and could mean even those with approved to be in the U.S. could abruptly see those permissions revoked. There were 12.8 million green card holders and 3.6 million people in the U.S. on temporary visas last year, according to the Department of Homeland Security. I still say the easiest thing to do is just, well, for one, say if you're not in the country legally, you have a month to get out, or else you're not going to be deported. You're going to be arrested and put in hard labor. I think that would cause a lot of voluntary deportations. I still don't know why we haven't implemented something along, in that regard. And for everybody else, I think, permanent, temporary, conditional visas are fine. It basically just says you got to pay taxes. You don't get Social Security. You will never be a citizen. That pathway is completely blocked to you. And you break a single law and you have to leave. And you miss the tax payment, you have to leave. And your any money you send overseas is tariffed 50 to 100%. And like, these are very simple things that will very easily solve all of these problems. Or we can hunt them down and drag them by their ankles and cause a bunch more problems and waste a bunch more money. So again, it's like, these are our options. Either say no at the border. When caravans show up begging for entrance, you just be mean to them, which it's not even mean. There's nothing mean about saying no. There's nothing mean about not being taken advantage of. Like, one message you want to get across. You're not nice by being taken advantage of. You're not a kind person or a generous person because you allow other taxpayers to bear the burden of your altruism. Okay? You're not a good person for being taken advantage of. You're not a bad person for refusing to be taken advantage of. You're not a bad person for locking your front door when a stranger's trying to get in. Okay? So it's not even mean. So I don't even like that framing. But yeah, you got to disappoint criminals. People are begging you for something and you just have to say no. And that is why, I read the thing where it said just saying no to women, because it is the thing I feel like every woman in my life, I have to go through this, where it's just like, they just wanted to do things for people because people say they're sad if they don't do them. And it's like, that's not my problem. What are you talking about? No, just because that is like, but that person really wants it. And it's just like, okay. So what? That literally doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't. Oh, but the Guatemalan person really wants to live in America. Okay. But thank you for telling me that. What's his favorite color? Right? Does he like Christmas or Easter more? Like, these things don't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't care. We don't have to give them things. We don't have to surrender things to people. And I get that it makes you feel mean. You feel mean doing it. You can either feel mean or you can let 10 million people into the country and we can have to tear families apart and go around dragging these people to alligator Alcatraz to send them to El Salvadorian prison camp. Like, why? Why not just say no at the border and avoid all of the chaos that comes after it? So this is just like the endless condition that we find ourselves in, where it's like very easy just not to not do the thing that causes all the problems. But instead we do that thing and then we're all stuck picking up the pieces and trying to cobble everything back together. Actually, I had some more. Here you go. Mostly peaceful memes. There are 55 million foreigners in U.S. on visas. There's another 30 plus million here illegally. There's a very good chance that 1 in 3 people living in the United States are not American. What the actual F? And it's only going to get worse. I'll show you clips on the other side of like what's happening in Canada, for example, where more Indians have entered Canada in the last 5 years than the last 100 years combined. And there are giant corporations running diploma mills to categorize these people as students so they get their, you know, extra special access visas to the country. And we just have to stop this. We have to stop this, and it has to be stopped. And the people that are doing it deliberately because they care more about the numbers going up in the GDP than they do about the condition of the people's lives around them. Well, we're going to get into all of that in the next. I'm going to try to play like 4 or 5 videos just explaining both the immigration crisis and the devastating effects it's having on the economy and the ability of Americans and Canadians, anybody else in the Western world, to just, you know, enjoy the privileges handed down to them through the sacrifices of their ancestors, but also just in general, the various methods by which the economy has been used to just utterly destroy the lives of all of us. And we're in this bizarre kind of situation where it's like, we can all see it. It's all so much worse, but we're like trapped in this cycle that we really have to break free from. And you can't break free from it if you don't acknowledge it first. So we're going to get into how we got into this situation on the other side. Stay with us. Quick commercial break. Make sure to go to thealexjonesstore.com to keep us on the air and in the fight. And we'll be back with some very informative videos. Don't go anywhere.
The last 5 years, I've had all these scientists on promoting spike protein detoxes that have saved so many people and done all this. And finally, we're like, hey, we better do our own. Let's make the best. We take the 2 best-selling ones, combine the two with stuff that the government tried to ban so people would die. And yeah, we're selling stuff that really works. Tell us about Ultimate Life Force. It's a horse pill. I take it a few times a year as a detox. So good for cardiovascular. Just one of the ingredients in this alone is on record a game changer they tried to ban. Right. This is so important.
N-acetylcysteine, better known as NAC, was widely available pre-pandemic, but during the pandemic, during COVID, they took it off Amazon because it was too powerful. Too many people were getting well from it. They say, okay, this isn't a supplement. This is a drug. Now, we're not making that claim. This is a supplement, but it is a supplement that is so powerful it could be used and compared to something like that.
And what is NAC?
N-acetylcysteine is the main precursor to your body's master antioxidant, glutathione, right? Glutathione is what your body uses to detoxify everything. But most importantly, your lungs. NAC reduces lung mucus and is incredibly powerful. This is rocket fuel. This is the gasoline. This is the fuel you need to make the glutathione. But more importantly, even than that almost, I was taking a look at Ultimate Life Force and I forget about these things. These things are something that they wanted to ban even more, the natokinase and the serapeptase. Those are compounds that go in and break down blood clots and scar tissue and inorganic things in the body. That's for the spike protein. The cool thing is everybody, every human can get healthy. It just takes different specific steps to get healthy. And that's why becoming knowledgeable about...
Well, that's like breeds of cows. They're like, these cows can handle the heat. These cows can't. These cows can handle cold. They can't. These dogs can handle this. These can't. We're all dogs. We're all cows. We're all the same species, but there's certain things each group can't handle.
100%. I agree with that. And it's so key. I mean, the reason why Methylene Blue has just been such an incredible hit to the audience and to the supporters, listeners, to us, everyone, is because, well, like, we really feel the effect, you know?
It's like the Garden of Eden. God made all these things to work together.
It's all there. The information's readily
available. No, it's absolutely incredible. These are great products. They fund the operation. And, folks, it's common sense. Go get them. TheAlexShowStore.com. Get the bovine colostrum, get the methyl drive, get the power plant, get the methylene blue, get it all.
What's cool about supplements, at least to me, is you're able to look at these different genetic groups, and then you can go, okay, they need help with this one thing, we got a compound for that.
All we did was go out with the top selling products of all the studies and just combine them together.
100%. And I mean, you look at this product, the NAC alone makes it worth buying, but you've got four or five other things in there directly targeted to addressing COVID and long COVID.
People say, well, I don't have COVID right now. The point is it's good for you, period.
100%. We've all got scar tissue in us. We've all got issues. We've all got these inorganic compounds, these microplastics. We look at something like Ultimate Life Force, it might be able to address some of those situations. You look at this, you look at the other products we're offering you, it's kind of hard to do an individual pitch for them because they're all so amazing. It's incredible. We make this stuff for you and for ourselves. Everyone at the InfoWars office is gobbling these supplements left and right. That's why I made these, is so I could take them.
And then you designed it to go with our ultramethylene blue.
Absolutely. That's the key. Before any, like, man or woman, young and old, if you're on methylene blue, you got to take it.
Everybody loves the formulas, and I've noticed if I take both together, the energy is totally insane. Each one is very strong on its own.
Methyl drive is something that every person in the country should take. This is something so powerful they tried to ban it.
So the methylene blue is like the engine and gasoline. These products together is the nitrous oxide.
Exactly. It turbocharges.
In the next hour, very excited to talk to her about how we can all activate and do our part to stop BlackRock's wholesale looting of retirement funds to progress their ESG evil globalist agenda. Very excited to talk to her. And let me tell you, folks, thealexjonesstore.com is a place to be this weekend. We have a massive sale going on and two new incredible cars to give away to you or some lucky winner out there who purchases something from thealexjonesstore.com. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. It is the last week of the Gladiator giveaway, that great Jeep truck. There's also a new giveaway for a red C8 Corvette. I think this is the first time we've done a sports car. And what a sports car, folks. Every single purchase gets 50 times entries for the Gladiator and the C8 Corvette. So make any purchase, you get 50 times the entries.
into that raffle. And this weekend only, customers can enjoy an extra 25% off store-wide for our weekend sale. And as always, VIPs can get up to 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. Sign up for a VIP as a VIP today, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. It costs you $30. You get $40 in store credit. And hell, if you just want to sign up, get the store credit, get the massive discount, get the entries to the cars, and then cancel VIP, you can absolutely do it. It's free and easy to cancel anytime. But the moment you sign up, you immediately get that $40 gift certificate, essentially, to the store, and you get the extra, I think you even get extra giveaway. There's so many benefits being a VIP club member. Today's the day. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison or /VIP. Sign up for the VIP club. Get that $40 credit. Enter to win the incredible cars, and I'll tell you more about them later. But for now, I want to go to this video, clip number 14. Little story of a couple of countries, right? This isn't even about mass migration. It's about the influx of Indians to Canada as just one symptom of the overall genocide of white people the world over. Let's watch.
Do you want to know why Indians are getting so much hate in Canada now? It's because more Indians have come to Canada in the last 5 years than the last 100 combined. And they're all coming as international students. Great. They're all studying at schools that are legitimate. No. 94% are studying at community colleges and these diploma mills for certificates. Like Anderson College, that used to be a Walmart, and then they made it into some diploma mills. Or Candor College, which is literally connected to an Indian restaurant, has graduated over 45,000 Indian students, and also has another college beside it, Stanford. So here they are. Sasani is going to Stanford. No, not the one in California, the one in Brampton or Tobram College, where when you go on Google Street View, it was literally a mechanic shop 1 year ago. What is this school? What are these schools? I'm genuinely asking. Why are you coming to these schools? Or Sunview College, which is connected to some bar. Places like Lamberton College, which is connected to Queens College, which God knows what that is. This is where the students were protesting because they failed all their classes. I don't know how dumb you have to be to fail classes at a diploma mill. I showed you like five. There are 800. There are 800 of these just in Ontario. I don't know about the other provinces. I'm Toronto born and raised, and every brown kid I grew up with went to either UFT, York, or Ryerson. All right? What the fuck is this? What are these schools? But the whole stereotype was, are you going to be a doctor, engineer, or lawyer? Now it's, are you going to be Uber Eats, DoorDash, or Lyft? India has some of the smartest people on the planet. I'm not even Indian. You know who taught me AP calculus? A random Indian man on YouTube. We're not getting these geniuses, all right? We're literally getting deep rural villagers. That's why they're studying at these fake schools. Because they would never qualify for permanent residence without a little standing. Which is why the highest number of asylum seekers in Canada were international students from India. Illegal border crossings into the United States, only Indian international students. These dudes that are protesting in tents for PR when they went to these fake diploma mills, never seen before, only Indians. Have you ever seen job lineups for minimum wage that circle around the block? Millions, literally millions of villagers to compete with high school and college kids for jobs. That's why people are talking about pooping on beaches. Indians have been here forever. Never heard about pooping on beaches until now. Villagers. And you have these dudes dancing. Why are you dancing? And you constantly hear the exact same complaint. You know, sir, we are paying more than the Canada student. Indian international student paying double. Well, no Canadians are going to these schools, right? These are just Indian international students going to schools that only take Indians. And anytime you call out any of their bullshit, oh, you hate us because you ain't us. You know, you are jealous of the Indian. Google CEO is Indian. Well, the Google CEO went to Stanford in Palo Alto, all right? You went to the fake Stanford in Brampton. You're not the same.
And of course, you know, it's like on the face of it, it's like, well, what's the problem? They're training them for skills. They're going to be plumbers. And it's like, you understand they could do that for the Canadian people, right? You understand that all the money that's going towards this, like a huge amount of it, just like America, is funded through the Canadian government, through fake NGOs that are supposedly there to set up to help facilitate the arrival of these desperate refugees. And they're just importation mills. They're just bringing these people in. And again, it's like, wouldn't the Canadians benefit from this? I mean, if all this money is available to train people, you know, in these jobs, I'm not even criticizing, like go to one of these colleges, get a certificate to be an HVAC repair guy or whatever. You can make a good living. It's great. Canadians would probably love to do that, to have their education subsidized and, you know, be able to get a high skill manual labor job and then go out and build a family. But no, that's reserved exclusively for the foreigners. And remember, there is a literally endless supply of Indians. There's no limit to the amount of Indians. By the time you bring over 100,000, 200,000 have been born there. So like what is the cap here? What is the ultimate? I mean, you could replace every single person in Canada and it wouldn't even register on the demographics in India, right? How many people live in Canada? A couple million? I mean, my God. There's 1.6 billion Indians in the world. So it goes from 1.6 to, you could replace everybody in Canada and it goes from 1.6 billion to 1.5 or whatever. And it's like, so what is the limit? So just everybody in Canada will be Indian, then everybody in America can be Indian. You replace everybody in America and Canada with Indians. There's still a billion Indians in India waiting to get over here. So what is the limit? When does it stop? Of course, it never stops. It's not going to stop. And all of this is on purpose because it was never the design of the government to actually uphold the well-being and, general happiness of the people that they rule over. Those people are inconvenient. They've been, indoctrinated in this idea that they deserve like a home and a yard and free time. No. Bring in the Indians, put them in a tiny, coffin-sized apartment, give them basic income, daily rations, and they'll be happy because at least the rivers in Canada aren't yet filled entirely with human excrement and dead bodies, but they will be soon enough, so keep it up. But of course, all of this is just in line with the general mission over the last 100 years of Western governments to slowly but surely and very deliberately destroy the well-being and living standards of the people in their countries. Because they're evil, I guess. I mean, you can come up with whatever reason you want, but obviously that has been the ultimate outcome, and the purpose of a system is whatever it does. Let's go to clip number two here, and we'll do two videos, very well done AI videos. I found them on The General is the Twitter account, so I don't know, maybe there's a label here where I can give credit. These are really, really well done. The first is about the Federal Reserve, the second about the gold standard. Let's take a look at the way that our economic system has been weaponized against us for a century. Clip number 12 first.
Jekyll Island, November 1910. Seven bankers meeting in secret to create America's central bank. We just can't call it that.
Creating of the Federal Reserve, America's greatest...
The 1907 panic nearly destroyed us. Banks failed. Fortunes vanished.
We want to control America's money supply. Create booms, trigger busts, and profit from both. And how will we do that?
We'll create money from nothing, loan it to the government, and charge interest. Legal counterfeiting, my friends.
But there's a cost. Every dollar we print steals value from existing dollars. It's a hidden tax that flows directly to us. And it gets worse. If we ever get off the gold standard, governments can print money for wars. Endless wars become possible. And profitable.
Since Americans hate central banks, we'll call it the Federal Reserve. Sounds governmental, doesn't it? It's not.
The president will appoint board members, but we'll pick who he appoints. We'll have 12 regional banks. Looks decentralized, democratic even. But New York banks control them all. That's us.
You're probably wondering how we're going to get this through Congress.
December 23rd, 1913. Most of Congress home for Christmas. Perfect timing for passing unpopular legislation. I'll publicly oppose our own bill in Congress. They'll pass it thinking they beat Wall Street. We'll fund university chairs, write the textbooks. They'll teach our system as economic science. Beautiful. Every American born after this will inherit debt on money we created from nothing. Generational servitude. The Federal Reserve. Not federal, no reserves. But everyone will think it's their government protecting them.
Good afternoon.
Take the Fed out of your life, price your life in Bitcoin. Opportunitycost.app. And now here's one about the gold standard.
America's gold was supposed to back the dollar. Leaving the gold standard was the most costly mistake we ever made.
What was so bad about gold?
It kept them honest, but they wanted power. You know, kid, folks today think this is just how life's supposed to be.
What do you mean?
Back in my day, One job could feed a family. My mother stayed home, father worked, and we ate together every night. Didn't realize how good we had it. After the World War, they promised gold-backed dollars, but they broke that promise. They printed paper backed by nothing, funded wars we couldn't afford and shouldn't have been involved in. But France caught on and sent a warship to get back their gold. Truth is, if more countries followed, our vaults would be empty and game over.
I have directed the Secretary of the Treasury to take the action necessary to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar into gold.
Turns out, when you fake the money, everything else follows, and you screw the next generation over. And it snowballs, kid. Prices shot up, paychecks didn't, life got tougher, and nobody knew why. We tried raising our kids the old way, but we didn't have the time or the money.
So you outsourced parenting?
Yeah, I guess you could say we did. Government schools raised them, and the TV taught them bad morals. They learned debt, not savings, bought houses they couldn't afford, played video games, gambling, antidepressants, and crimes. Families fractured. Divorce rates doubled. Birth rates plummeted. Things got so bad, people started financing Chipotle.
Financing a burrito?
Yeah, it's getting bad. Obesity. People eating cheap slop instead of real food. We got softer, sicker, and lazier. A nation in decline. But it didn't happen overnight. When Nixon left the gold standard, we traded sound money for a lifetime of debt.
How will they ever pay it back?
I don't think they plan to. Both sides keep spending like there's no tomorrow and leaving the bill to your generation. We didn't get it right, but you still got a chance. So, take the reins, kid. Hold your ground and don't give up on sound money.
Start using the new gold standard. Again, I guess that was, what was it, opportunitycost.app, I think is what it said at the end there. I just want to give credit to whoever made that, because well done. Probably one of the best uses of AI I've seen to date. Incredible stuff. In fact, it makes me want to get into the other story. I was just reading from, I think Variety is like, Disney urgently searching for creative new outlets to bring boys back in because they destroyed Marvel and Lucasfilm. It's like, tell you what, you guys can just go to hell. And we'll use AI to make better movies than you ever could with good messaging. And they'll be popular because they'll resonate with humanity, not your soulless corporate drone ESG world. So goodbye, Hollywood. Hello, AI creations informing the masses. Absolutely fantastic stuff. So that's the Federal Reserve and the gold standard. But they had some help. There were some other, you know, political and societal changes that contributed to the slow but sure enslavement of the American people. Let's go to clip number six here. One of my favorite guys on YouTube ever. I don't even know his name, but I see his videos all the time and everything he says I agree with. Let's watch. There's another problem that American society has had to deal with as our money becomes worth less and the impositions on our income increase. Let's watch.
The creation of the double income household was one of those changes which went from being an option to an obligation. The principal beneficiaries were government, who had twice as many people to tax, property owners, because now you needed two salaries to buy a house, so the option of running a household on one salary basically disappeared. The family lost 35 hours of discretionary leisure every week with no commensurate increase in living standards because the money got soaked up by property prices and by taxation. I'm simply saying that there are many, many things that start as an option and then they become an obligation. They become an imposition.
I love that guy. His name's Rory something. I can never remember. I can never remember his name. But he always reframes things in a very creative way. And it's another one of these instances where it's like when you ask people that are really good, sort of at whatever angle they approach, whatever industry they're in, you're going to find that they align with us. Like we're just the ones that sort of catalog all of it and keep it all, you know, in a frame that these things are all interconnected and relate to one another and are deliberately all pursuing the same goal, right? It's not a coincidence that you have the Federal Reserve and then we get off the gold standard and, you know, we normalize the two income household. Like all of these things are happening at a pace and they never, it never contributes to your well-being. It never You know, what change in the past society could have any benefit even remotely as good as the things that we lost through the two-income family dynamic? Maybe I phrased that in a weird way. But like he just laid out there that families lost something like 30 hours a week of spare time, right? 30 hours a week where the wife would not have to be aware. She'd be able to be home with the kids, either just playing games or taking care of things around the house. What change could be equal to 30 hours a week of free time? I mean, that it's like unheard. It's like you can't even buy that now. That's the real problem, right? It's not even that like you get successful, you just suddenly don't have to work anymore. Like the way things are set up now, that has been stolen from us in a way that is really, really, really hard to get back. So these changes are always negative. It's always in the same direction against the middle class, against the, you know, regular people, making it harder for the average person to live, making them work just a little bit harder for a little bit less money. And you just perpetuate that year over year, decade over decade. And you look around now and people are sitting in their cars crying about the fact that they will mathematically never be able to afford a house ever, ever, ever. So this is deliberate. It's on purpose. And we have to consciously make changes to get back to the system in which we had 30 hours of extra free time per week. I mean, my goodness. We'll go to one final video here. Again, sort of summing it all up and putting it in easy to understand terms by using a story for children to say the obvious. This guy's running for office, which again, we love to see. You love to see people with these very elementary and obvious ideas actually presenting them and making the argument. Because right now you look at political arguments, and it's a lot of speculation. It's a lot of nonsense, just like thought manipulation that doesn't have any real grounding in reality. Here's this guy just telling you exactly how the real world works and what's actually happened to America over the last couple of decades. Clip number two. He's a man running for office, Marty O'Donnell, and I know people in my generation know and love his work as he is the composer of the Halo games. As if he hasn't done enough for humanity, here's his pitch for his campaign. Let's watch.
Hey everybody, Marty here with a story. A story you probably already know. Once upon a time, there was a farmer and his wife. They had a goose, and the goose laid eggs. One day, the goose laid a solid gold egg. The farmer and his wife sold it for a lot of money and got filthy rich. Then they waited for the next golden egg. It took too long, and they got impatient, decided to cut open the goose to get all the rest of the golden eggs. And what they got was a dead goose. The end. The traditional moral of the story, don't be greedy. My moral of the story, if you want more golden eggs, be nice to the goose. Also, don't mistake the golden egg for the goose that laid it. So, what is the golden egg in our country? Who is the goose? And what does this have to do with our government? The goose is all the working people, middle-class families, and small businesses that create prosperity, innovation, and healthy communities in every corner of this land. The federal government has mistaken the golden egg for the goose. They focus on being nice to the money supply. Big banks, big business, big unions, big whatever, and expect those things to create more golden eggs. And that's where we find ourselves today. Since 2000, how is the goose doing compared to the golden egg? Well, home prices are 6 times higher, government spending 5 times higher, S&P 500 9 times higher, even groceries have grown 2 times higher than regular folks' income. That's called being mean to the goose. The goose has been squeezed and kicked to the point where the desire to lay more golden eggs has almost disappeared. Turns out, geese don't really require all that much care in order to thrive. It doesn't actually take all that much to be nice. Just stop being mean. The goose doesn't need handouts, special programs, or even love. Mostly, we just need to be left alone. Provide justice, safety, and freedom. And watch the goose lay more golden eggs. Read the preamble to the Constitution. It says it all. Be nice to the goose. Thanks.
Marty O'Donnell for Congress. He's got my support, I'll tell you that right now. MartyForCongress.vote. MartyForCongress.vote. It really is that simple. Just stop being mean to the goose. Stop kicking the goose around. I mean, that really is how it feels. See, the American people, just left alone. I mean, for most of our existence, the federal government wasn't even a thought in people's minds. I mean, half the time, they're just driving out to some, you know, godforsaken salt lake in the middle of a desert, and they create like a incredible civilization there. They don't need help. We don't need anybody giving us anything. We are the golden goose. We lay golden eggs as long as we're not being plucked for the benefit of the bankers constantly. And I really can't get over how simple and good that message is. Stop being mean to the golden goose. So they really want to do is chop us right open. Where's he running? Looks like Nevada, maybe? In the Vegas area? Yeah, it looks like he's in the Vegas area. Marty O'Donnell for Congress. Look, if the man can score Halo and then give a presentation like that, I don't know. I, for one, am just sick of the typical politician. And I'm, you know, maybe that guy, I don't know anything about that guy. Literally all I know about him is writes good music, made that video. That's the entirety of my knowledge. But like, isn't that enough? When you watch that guy's video, doesn't he just seem like a normal dude? Seems like a guy that you would not be surprised to run into as a manager of a Best Buy or whatever else. And it's just like, can we have that instead of Jasmine Crockett, instead of Maxine Waters, instead of even, you know, people on our side, just whatever presentation they're putting on, the Lindsey Graham, holier than thou, saber rattling, chest pumping, or the we're standing up against the oppression of the white man. It's just like, oh my God, can we just get normal dudes that are just like, hey, let's stop being mean to everybody. Like, well, great, can you be in charge? Can we put you in charge? This is not hard. It's not hard to do very normal, good, obvious things. Can we just get some normal dudes from middle America and just put the crown on their head and say, you have ultimate power now? Tell us what to do. My goodness. We're going to be back on the other side with a update from Alex Jones, his breakdown of what's going on with the investigation into John Bolton. And then we'll be joined by Tiffany Cianci to talk about how BlackRock has infiltrated our government and gotten them to give BlackRock access to your retirement fund. This is the Halo soundtrack, by the way, if you aren't cultured, if you're not in tune with the finer arts. This is the guy that made this. You can just close your eyes and imagine in America where there's 33% less people and the house prices drop accordingly and everybody's happy.
There are millions of different knives for sale around the world right now. There's been probably tens of millions of different designs throughout human history. I don't think anybody knows. But when you go to the alexjonesstore.com, you are going to have limited edition select knives that our current military recognizes are the very best for self-defense and will never lie to you and will never fail you and will never jam or run out of ammo or bullets like a gun will. Ladies and gentlemen, we have this limited edition tactical dagger with the hard rubber olive green grip, the skull crusher, 1776 on one side of the hilt, my signature on the other. It's collectible. 6-inch razor sharp stainless steel blade and the high tech scabbard and the clip that goes on your belt. This is an amazing knife. Then you've got this. Only 1,000 of these left. Limited edition. Tip of the spear with the Spartan, the skull crusher, the brass knuckles. This is an updated World War II trench knife. This is all about defending you and your family. Exclusively available at thealexjonesstore.com. And then it's the Blades and Bullion Sale, our great sponsor at Bigley that keeps us on the air, held back when these coins sold out, just a few hundred of each. So this is the very end of it. You've got the Trump 47 fight battle for the Republic coin. You've got the Spartan tip of the spear coin, the Declaration of Independence, Paul Revere coin, and people asked for it, so we gave it to you. We have the Alex Jones limited edition InfoWars coin. All at thealexjonesstore.com. The Blades and Bullion sale, up to 40% off on top of the discounts that are already there, and it keeps it on the air. Take advantage of this right now while you can.
Alex Jones has good genes. Get your methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com and make good genes great again.
Overnight, the FBI raided John Bolton. I told you this was coming. Trump's not playing games. Now, when you read the corporate news about it, you see Cash Patel, the FBI director, saying nobody's above the law, and they're not giving details. Well, I've told you months ago what was coming, and now I'm going to give you the rest of the story right now. You see, there's a statute of limitations on all of the perjury of Comey, Brennan, Clapper, Ray, and others in front of Congress, lying about not leaking, lying about not giving Trump real intelligence, lying about so many other things they did, lying about not knowing about the Russiagate thing or not knowing it was false when they created it. But because of the ongoing keeping of classified information that we know Bolton had, and the fact that it came out a few months ago when they released out of the Office of National Intelligence all those secret documents where Bolton was giving Trump fake intelligence briefings and holding back the real intelligence that they knew there was no Russia connection to Trump, that they'd actually created it. And of course, Bill Barr was involved, all of them, not just the Democrats. And so that all extends out because they have the secret documents, or at least had them, and they all colluded in racketeering for the Mar-a-Lago raid on Melania's panty drawer and all the rest of it, because they were trying to get documents that they knew Trump had. And of course, he was the president, so he was allowed to have them. It was Joe Biden who couldn't, as vice president, keep a bunch of documents. That's illegal. So again, this goes to the grand juries that are opened, not just on Jack Smith and all the rest of them, but specifically on Bolton, Clapper, all of them, Comey. So this is huge. And there are a bunch of grand jury people don't even know about that have been set up. I'll just leave it at that for you. And so to all my viewers, you remember 8 years ago, I was the one telling you you're not going to get indictments from Sessions and all the rest of them. Now I've been telling you, you're going to get indictments. It's going to happen. The only issue is the deep state is going to obviously stage some type of crisis or false flag to try to change the subject and try to bail themselves out. So we're in an incredibly dangerous time right now, also a very, very exciting time. They tried to kill Trump twice. Trump knows that he doesn't take them down, he's done when he gets out, and so is America. These very same people try to put me in prison under the same project. I was targeted under Crossfire Hurricane. We were the first to break it 8 years ago. We got the NSA documents. So we've published those again recently. So this is a big deal, ladies and gentlemen. And there are a lot of indictments coming. Now, you can't say for sure the grand juries will do it, but the evidence is so overwhelming that if they don't get to those grand juries and somehow intimidate them, it's open and shut. It's prima facie. So Bolton has been raided. Everybody's saying, oh, we don't know why. It's over giving the president false intelligence briefings, then locking in his safe the fact that they knew he was totally innocent because they've been the ones who set him up. And all the notes they wrote just cover their asses saying, well, Obama told us to do it. He has presidential immunity, but they don't. And Obama can then be impeached, even though he's not in office, stripped of his presidential immunity. And that's the plan. That's the plan from Trump's lawyers. You know how I know? So talk to him. So this is where we are, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll be covering it today at 11 a.m. Central, 12 noon Eastern. Harrison Smith is on right now, American Journal, Infowars.com/show, Band.video, and Raw Shows on X. Be sure and tune in to the American Journal. In fact, they just launched the broadcast. And normally I'd be hitting the weights right now, but this is so big, I'm making phone calls to my FBI sources and others. So there's Ben kicking ass.
What's up, Stud? Good morning.
Totally kick ass. What's happening? They're getting ready to diet all their asses.
They just raided Bolton.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I told them to report on that.
Yep.
We get the archivist, the flashback a month ago. I said it's coming.
Yeah, you did.
All right. So Bolton. Ha ha ha. So we're up here. We're fighting hard. We appreciate all of you. They've just launched American Journal. Obviously, you guys are going with the ball. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at theolicsoulstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try Ultramethylene Blue, exclusively available at TheAlexShowStore.com.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio today by Tiffany Cianci. She is, of course, an activist raising awareness about the critical threat that private equity poses to American society. She's raising the alarm and putting pressure on private equity firms that are covertly monopolizing entire industries by using hostile takeovers and kangaroo courts. Learn how to fight back by following her on X at The Vino Mom, that's the V-I-N-O Mom, or by going to TiffanyCianci.com, that's at The Vino Mom, and TiffanyCianci.com. Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
I'm so excited I'm in town and I could come in and do this.
This is great. It was great seeing you at Ron Paul's birthday, and you told me you were going to be in Austin, and we couldn't pass up this chance, especially since there's so much stuff going on. I wish it was better news that that you were joining us for, but what is the latest with private equity?
Well, you've shared all my videos. You've been involved the whole way through. I've been screaming that private equity needed a bailout, that their bubble was popping, and that they were going to seek one with President Trump. And I begged the world to back me in stopping him from doing it, letting him know we weren't going to tolerate it. I wish it was enough. So many people tried. But what ended up happening is a few weeks ago, after 7 years of lobbying, seven consecutive years, private equity has known this death spiral was coming for years. You can't strip mine wealth out of companies and not know that eventually the bankruptcies will follow. You're strip mining something. Eventually the earth runs out of minerals. Eventually, like, that mining site has to give up. The same is true when you strip mine a company, a community. And they knew it was coming. And they laid the pressure on very heavily after Trump floated the idea of closing the carried interest loophole, which in retrospect, I actually think he used as a fundraising maneuver. I said I thought that was a possible risk. Their spend with Congress went up by like 300% after he did that. And just 2 weeks ago, just a few days after I posted my last plea begging everyone to be loud, he signed an executive order and buried it in an executive order a lot of people that watch this channel were happy about.
Right.
It was an executive order that allowed people to invest their 401k in crypto. But silently, on the backside of that very popular initiative, he included that 401ks could now invest money in private equity funds. And he put in a caveat that you couldn't sue your fund manager for mismanaging your funds in doing so.
So that just opened up this gigantic pool of money that previously private equity had not had access to.
Yeah.
Which is all of our retirement fund. If you have a retirement fund, it's probably yours that is now been made available to the likes of BlackRock and others.
In the lead up to trying to get him to sign this executive order, there were all of these ads, not ads, articles that were pay to play that were put in places like Fortune and Forbes that were literally touting that once you invest your 401k in private equity, you're going to get 1,000% windfalls. We talked about this on your show.
Yep.
This was an actual headline from, I think, Fortune. And it was, you're going to get 1,000% windfalls that will make your brain melt. Mm-hmm. This was supposed to be a finance magazine. That's not a headline.
Right.
That's a car salesman gimmick.
Right.
That's a used car salesman's pitch, okay? And they were doing this over and over again in the weeks leading up to this so that people would be excited about it, would not push back, would not go to their fund managers and say, don't you dare. Because there are roughly $4 trillion in assets sitting in private equity right now that they can't sell.
Right.
They're stuck. And the interest rates have ballooned. Like, a lot of people think that the interest rates that private equity is paying is like 7%, like we're paying on a house. No. They bought everything they bought and leveraged it with adjustable rate debt. And so they're paying like 14% interest, 19% interest. If it's considered a distressed asset, 21% interest on $1 billion.
Right.
That's insane. And they can't pay the bills anymore. And just like 08, in 08, we talked about this being like 08.
Yeah.
In 08, the banks privatized all the profit for years. They never gave anything back to the American people. They took all that money and left all of that bad debt.
Yeah.
And we bailed them out. Just like in 08, they had privatized the boom years of private equity for the last decade, and now they're socializing the risk. All of us are going to pay that price.
It's so outrageous. And, you know, it's almost ironic that in the last segment, I played a video from a guy running for Congress, and his whole pitch was, you know, they're killing the golden goose. And then the article that you brought in to talk about this has that exact phrase, private equity will never be the same. 401ks are the golden goose.
Yeah.
And this is... The $12 trillion market for retirement savings is the golden goose for asset managers. But for private equity funds, it's been pretty much untouchable, but that's about to change. So is it over? I mean, now they have access to these funds. I mean, do we have to claw this back? Do we have to have another order to undo the first order? I mean, what can we do now that this has gone through?
There has not been a single law or executive order written by any president since Carter that gave private equity more power that ever took it back.
Right.
Ever since Carter.
Right.
Not one. Every single thing they've ever gotten, they used to exploit more of our communities, more of our businesses, more of our small businesses, more of our families. They have never given one thing back, and no president has ever taken it back. And every time we've gotten close, they've spent enough money to make sure it never happened.
Well, what is the argument here? Because at least with 2008, as you know, fallacious as the argument was, it was, well, these banks are too big to fail. If we don't do this, it's going to be, you know, it's going to make the Great Depression look like a cakewalk. I mean, what is the argument here for opening up the 401ks for private equity?
The argument that they want us to believe, or the argument they made to Trump?
Well, either one. I mean, I guess that's the convenience of doing this through executive orders and in secret, is you never have to actually make the argument. At least in 2008, they had to pitch it to the American people like it was a good thing. But what arguments are they making?
The arguments that they made to Trump were numerous, but some of the most effective ones. We've all seen Trump is very upset with Jerome Powell.
Right.
He really wants him to lower interest rates. I caution people to recognize that lowering interest rates is bidding for a bad economy.
Hmm.
It's really dangerous. The American people, we don't have the capital to buy anything right now, but private equity desperately needs lower interest rates.
Okay.
And what's happened is, because all of the leveraged debt they've put onto their companies has skyrocketed because the interest rates are high, and we have sticky inflation that will not come down because of greedflation and a number of other issues. What's happened is there's no longer a fair market valuation for any of their companies, because they can't flip it for more than what they've already leveraged on top of it.
Right.
So they have somewhere between $3.8 and $4.8 trillion in assets that are stuck. And their funds are supposed to close out at this point. A lot of people don't know that private equity operates in 7 to 10 year funds. So no private equity firm owns what they buy.
Oh, okay.
That's how they avoid any liability. They create a limited partnership fund.
Okay.
And a few people put in a little money, and they borrow the rest from our pensions and banks and all kinds of things. And when they put that money in there, they have 10 years to spend it, extract revenue from something, dump it, do it one more time through 2-3 year cycles, and get people rich and get out. So let's say I want to buy Payless shoes, because we know private equity killed them. So I might buy Payless shoes. Let's say I bought it for $100 million. $10 million of that might have been the actual partner's money.
Right.
The other $90 million is borrowed with adjustable rate debt. okay? And I have 3 years to strip mine as much wealth out of that company as I can and find somebody to flip it to, or I could do the just thing and make it better and take it to IPO.
Right.
Nobody's doing that anymore. They've just abandoned that. It's just strip mining at this point. We haven't seen a real meaningful reform IPO in quite some time.
Right.
Okay. So if they were doing good work, they would be making the company better and IPOing it for the good of their fund. What they found with strip mining is just far more efficient because you could strip mine in 18 months, dump it to the next guy, strip mine in 18 months, dump it to the next guy. But right now, because the debt has gone up so high, they can't fair market flip it anymore. They're listing it and no one's buying. And so what they've started doing is something called a secondaries fund valuation, where they either create a continuation fund because they can't sell anything to close out their funds and finish their contracts. So they make a continuation fund where they just kind of extend their obligation, which only bankers can get away with, I'm sure.
Right.
Private equity firms can get away with. Or they're flipping it to one another on the secondaries market. Well, where I say, hey, I'm over here at, I don't know, Blackstone, and you're over there at, I don't know, let's say KKR. And I'm like, I have $60 billion in assets. I need to flip now. My funds have to close. And you say, I've got 60. You say, I'll give you 80 if you give me 80, and then they'll each be worth 80. And you flip them. That is fake.
Yeah.
That's a pyramid scheme. Even the Financial Times has called the secondaries market a pyramid scheme in modern private equity. Financial Times has said that clearly.
Like a Ponzi scheme or something. Robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, classic phrase, right?
But because the interest rates are stuck, all of these wealthy people that have invested in private equity, which is really what it comes down to, is the donor class,
right,
have their money stuck in private equity. And what people don't understand, and this is where it's going to hurt their 401ks, is that if I invest 50 grand in my 401k and it turns into 150,000 over 10 years, my fees on that are 0.5% per year. That's $7,700 over 10 years,
right,
that I pay in fees for managing and getting me $100,000 returns. If I do the same thing with private equity, I'm giving them over $60,000.
Oh, wow.
Because they get 2% of everything they manage and 20% of all your returns. Well, right now, every wealthy person that dumped $1 billion into private equity and they can't flip it is still paying those fees with no returns. So they needed this. They needed capital to come into the market so they could start flipping things again, even though it's at artificially valuated products. It's a complete facade. And we won't know it because we won't find out what it's actually worth for 10 years when our fund invests in it. For 10 years, it's going to look like we're coming up roses. Because do you remember that article I told you about the 1,000% returns?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me tell you what that
is. The used car salesman pitch from Fortune, yeah.
Let me tell you how they actually do that.
Okay.
So let's say that they have a company they bought at $100 million. Private equity doesn't ever have to say what something's really worth.
Okay.
There's no SEC filings. There's no, they'll just say, this is worth $1 billion now. They'll say, this is worth $1 billion now. It's gone up 1,000%. It's worth $1 billion now. Okay. And they fair market list it for $1 billion and no one will buy.
Right.
No one will buy. And they're like, 990, 800 million. No one will buy. 700 million. No one will buy. Well, the debt is 700 million because they've stacked that much on top of it and they're stuck. So they take the loss. They decide to do the trade and they say they're trading at $1 billion.
Right.
Seems reasonable, right? But it wouldn't sell even at 100 million, 200 million. So your fund gets to buy in and immediately that fund gets to mark it up to what they say is the fair market valuation. And suddenly your fund manager looks like a rock star to you because you have $1 billion in assets now in your fund. But you won't know for 10 years till that fund closes out that it couldn't flip the first time at fair market cost. And it sure as heck isn't going to the second time.
And it's just like, as you go through all this, you haven't mentioned customers, you haven't mentioned products, you haven't mentioned services. Like this is all just black magic nonsense.
This is literally Monopoly money just throwing back and forth in like the game of Monopoly when someone owns everything, no one does.
Oh,
right?
My God.
We don't have real valuations on anything with private equity. And I am not saying all private equity is evil. I want to clear, like a lot of people think I assume that. If your mom gives you money to start a business, that is private equity.
Right.
Private equity is anything that doesn't come from the public. Okay. If I'm not selling shares to get my equity, that is private equity. If your mom gives you money, that's not evil. Okay.
Right.
That's an investment from somebody you know and you're trying to give her a return. There are even private equity firms that do good work. There's I think it's called Levine Lichtenstein. They have a bunch of franchises they've bought that they did very good work with. They saved Tropical Smoothie Cafe, Fast Signs, Nothing But Cakes. Mm. The problem is that even with good funds that turn companies around. That's what we want. We want companies that are turning companies around, taking them to ICO.
And that's the pitch. I mean, that's why they would allow this to happen in the first place.
Yeah. Yes. Even with those companies, eventually that fund has to close out and they have to sell it.
Right.
They're not selling it to themselves. They have to sell it to someone else. They saved Tropical Smoothie Cafe, and this year they sold them to Blackstone.
Oh, no.
Okay? And so now the death spiral will begin. It might be slow, but it's going to begin. You see? And so it's just...
Yeah, and the golden goose or, you know, whatever you want to... It's, you know, it's just the greed of like, okay, I give you a dairy cow, and you could, for 20 years, get milk out of the cow or you could... eggs out of your chicken, but instead you're going to slaughter them now because you just want the beef now. And then, you know, in a month from now, you're going to have no beef, no milk, no eggs, and nothing.
But it would be like that if I saved one steak from that cow and still called it worth 20 years of dairy cow in 10 years.
Right, right.
That you would literally, you would have to save one steak, strip mine everything else out of the cow and say, this is still worth the value of that cow.
Yeah.
And somebody would believe you and buy it.
It just is so short-sighted and ridiculous. And, you know, also... And the fact that like these companies have so much power and they are clear, like they're open about their, you know, desires of this. They're not looking for a better life for you and your family. They're not looking to improve the business. You've got Larry Fink at the head of BlackRock saying we have to force behavioral changes. And of course that all involves DEI and ESG and just destroying everything good in the first place. And now he's in charge of the World Economic Forum.
Did you see what happened last week?
Should we get into that? So what's the significance of that? That the manager of the largest private equity firm, largest stakeholder, shareholder, the owner of everything, BlackRock, is now in charge of the World Economic Forum, or is at least now, you know, replacing Klaus Schwab, the head of the world. What does that portend to you?
I mean, first of all, he did it through a blatant power grab, and it was very hostile.
Okay, I haven't heard the details.
Wanted that job. Like, he really wanted that seat.
Interesting.
As the interim chair.
Okay, this wasn't something foisted upon him.
This was not like, oh, I'll take it for the team. He wanted this.
Really? Okay, I haven't heard this.
And there was a lot of backdoor maneuvering to get him in this position.
Interesting.
But what we should ask ourselves as a nation, as a world, really, what we must ask ourselves is if we want the person almost single-handedly responsible for the monopolization of our entire stock market and the wealth extraction of the entire middle class, now setting policy from the same seat of power that said we would own nothing and be happy.
Right.
He's already done the work to begin the process of turning us into a renter society. And we're going to allow that? That's our plan? The WEF is where that quote came from.
Right.
And now the man that set the stage for this to be our reality is there. We're almost at the perfect stage for the final game of Monopoly. And let me tell you, the whole point of Monopoly is that no one wins.
Right.
People think you win Monopoly. Monopoly was made as a warning. Literally, the owner said he made it as the inventor. He said he made it as a warning because when somebody owns every property and every space, there's nobody with any money to rent from you.
Right.
There's nothing left. And somebody's got to flip the board. I don't want to flip the board.
Right.
I don't want to flip this great American board that we've built. I want to save it. I want to diversify it. I want to divest. I want people to start having buying power. I want people to take part in politics. I want people to stop fighting each other. When I got news, you don't have anything to fight about. The only people you should be fighting are down versus up.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I want. And I don't want to flip the board, but we are so dangerously close.
So how do we get there? Because, you know, I see it on top of everything. Because I think a lot of people feel like you feel. I think if more people understood what was really going on, they would be vehemently against it, which is why it's all, you know, undercover and all these sort of weasel words are used. And you'll get 1,000% return. What's the big deal? So obviously, like, they're trying to keep a cap on this. But then I also worry that, you know, the right wing, it seems like most of the time they see, you know, people complaining about the financial situation and it's just, yeah, quit complaining, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, meanwhile, you got a bunch of socialists and communists out there going, let's flip the board. We're going to flip the board together and then we'll be in charge. What do we have to do to fix this problem without, you know, resorting to these communists and socialists taking power? Because they're the only ones that seemingly give a crap about. And obviously we know that these ideas are horrible. So what's the better pitch? How do we fix things without, you know, contributing to the rise of socialism and communism in this country?
If I told you, they might not let me come back on. Do you really want me to tell?
I want you to tell me.
Okay.
You're allowed to say whatever you want here. You're live on TikTok too. They have a new censor. So that's the only thing you have to be careful about.
I, uh, I want to be clear that I don't believe that we're past the point of no return, but I believe we are dangerously close. Historically, if you look back at any civilization in human history, you get to very dramatic political swings left, right. You get to about 8 and society irreparably fractures and someone flips the board. We're on like swing 6.5.
Right.
We're very, very close in our 4-year swings. And we used to have this moderating force in America that would pull us back to the middle in times of turmoil. We've always had that. That really changed in 2010 with Citizens United. Simultaneously, as the powers that be began to pour money into elections to control our politicians and to convince them to forget about their constituents, which they have absolutely and effectively done. Simultaneously, they poured money into places like the Republican National Committee and the Democrat National Committee and huge private interests to make sure that we started hating each other.
Right.
Prior to then, we could agree to disagree and we would learn from each other and we would still be friends and we would exist in third spaces. Starting in 2010, money did not just pour into politics, it poured into hate campaigns and divided us more than ever. It's been very intentional. Both sides have intentionally divided us over minuscule amounts of our values. Mm. Literally, the average American, we have 93, the average working class American has 93% of their values in common with the person they believe they hate the most.
Right.
And about 10% in common with a billionaire.
Right.
Okay? But for some reason, we allow them to convince us that I should hate some guy down the street from me because there's a flag in his yard,
right,
or one in the back of his pickup truck, instead of literally looking at them and going, I disagree with you on a few things, but I disagree with them on everything.
Right.
And I can do better. And so what it would really take is us demanding more from our politicians. But the only way we could do that, the only way politically, historically, that has ever worked is to recapture their fear. I almost brought my t-shirt today that says make politicians afraid again. And I'm speaking about losing their jobs. I want to be clear. I'm speaking about losing their jobs. I got that at the Libertarian National Convention.
Yeah.
Someone gave it to me as a present.
Great.
What I'm saying is that right now we have become so good and so conditioned at voting for who we're told to, just to stay red or blue. Vote blue no matter who. Vote red or else we're dead. Red,
right.
Like, I've heard that. I've seen those slogans. I've seen the bumper stickers, right? We've been so conditioned to vote blue no matter who that we keep people in office that haven't done anything for us in 30 years. And somehow they're still there, clinging to power with $400 million in the bank. Okay? They make $174,000 a year.
Right.
That's not okay. And so right now, all politicians, not all, there's about 12 that don't take any money from outside interests. Ro Khanna started the No PACs caucus. I love that.
Yeah.
That's why I interview Ro all the time. I disagree with him on all kinds of stuff, lots of stuff, but I interview him constantly, right? Thomas Massey, like, there are people in the No PACs caucus that we should be paying attention to. But what's happening, what we have to do, if we want this to fundamentally change, would require us to, one, show up at midterms and show up at the primaries for midterms. Right now,
right,
like, we have something like 0.03% of the voting public shows up at a primary for a midterm.
Right.
Great. and we wonder why the same people have been there for 30 years. All we have to do on both sides is just vote out the incumbents.
Right.
We don't even have to vote against our party. Just vote against the guy that's already there in your party.
Right.
If he's not doing anything for you, get rid of him.
By the time the primaries are over, you're stuck with
them. You're stuck with them, or we're back to vote red or you're dead. Vote blue no matter who. But if we can get to the primaries and just take a few jobs, all we have to do is flip the calculus. Right now, all political calculus is, I am more afraid of losing my donors and my power than I am of losing your vote, because they have nothing to fear.
Yeah.
They have nothing to fear. Dan Snyder, I think it was Dan Snyder, was running last year in Nebraska against, I think it was Deb Sullivan. Sullivan? I think it was Sullivan. I could be wrong on all of the names. He was running. He was a union leader. He was running. She did not show up for a single constituent event until like 3 weeks before the primary. She only beat him by 3%. She literally ignored every invitation for a town hall, failed to show up at meetings her constituents organized for her. Didn't even bother. But no one showed up to vote in the primaries. And he still got within 3%. Okay? He could have, and that was in an election year.
Right.
She didn't even show up for them.
And that's the case across the country. And I mean, right now, we're in this weird position where it's like, yes, we're 6.5 swings into the 8 swing cycle, but like, at the same time, there's so much opportunity for massive positive change. We'll be right back with Tiffany Cianci.
Every guest, I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene Bluetooth. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, known me for a long time, said sure he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more methylene blue. And then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah. I mean, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle. You gave me, it's great. It totally makes it, you can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at thealexjonesshore.com. It will certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation, folks. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, thealexjonesshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it on SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexJonesShore.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psychological. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first and then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. My guest is a little bubbly angel of doom here sitting next to me. It's so funny. Tiffany Cianci is my guest at The Vino Mom on X. The Vino Mom on X. The website, TiffanyCianci.com. You also have a huge following on TikTok. How can people follow you there?
At Tiffany Cianci on TikTok and YouTube.
At Tiffany Cianci. And it's true. You're such like a bubbly and happy person. And then you're just like, we're all going to die. Like, we're on the edge of the precipice and we're being pushed over. So it's very interesting. But I feel the same way myself too. I'm up here just reporting the worst things in the world and I just try to make it funny and I'm actually a happy guy, but it's like,
What do we do, Tiffany? What are we doing here?
In American history, whenever we came at the precipice of doom or loss for our country, our people have always rallied to change things. Okay. We have always and inevitably risen up. Now, we've never been against interests that are as powerful as we are at this point. There has never been this much. I mean, the 20s were kind of close, but they weren't allowed to pay the politicians directly. It was secret bribes under the table. You know what I mean? But we've never at any point in American history been at a point that was so close to feudalism.
Right.
Right.
That is what they're creating. Even the robber barons, you know, at least they built libraries for people. I mean, it's like you see the guys that are controlling the world now, and it's like, can we go back? Like, maybe Rockefeller wasn't that bad. At least he built trains. These people are just vampires, and I'm joking, obviously.
No, I mean, Rockefeller's evil too. We gave them the cover with Dodge versus Ford.
Yep.
And prior to that, they didn't have that cover.
Which is so weird because, you know, I always thought that was a pretty ridiculous ruling, right? The background is that Henry Ford wanted to pay his people really well.
He wanted to pay them double what everyone else was paying.
And basically they said, no, you can't do that. You have to prioritize your fiduciary responsibility to your investors, meaning they have to get the returns first, and then whatever's left over can. And so, you know, I've always been against that because it just seems obvious.
Do you know how Dodge brought the case?
I don't remember.
They bought one share of Ford stock and filed as a shareholder.
I didn't know that. I thought it was because they were.
That's why they did it. They didn't want to compete with them anymore.
Yeah,
because
right.
they did not want to pay their employees well, and they did not want to invest in the communities. So they bought a share of Ford stock and brought a case as a shareholder.
I didn't realize that, but I know the outcome. Like, I was always like, that's a ridiculous outcome. But hey, that's the law. That's how it's been forever. And now I'm like appealing to that. I'm like, well, but wait, because never. I mean, DEI, ESG, it just never made any sense. Obviously, if you want to make profit, the thing to do is to hire the best person. If you're now hiring somebody on the basis of race, you're decreasing your likelihood of achieving profit. How is that not violating fiduciary responsibility? And it's just, it's one of these things they just did, and investors just went, oh, okay, now there's a new, you know, ESG scale that I can, you know, judge investments by.
Who was the individual that set that standard?
It was Larry Fink, wasn't it?
And how many of the companies that could have brought suits did he control the, like, controlling interest in?
Probably all of them.
Almost all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they're shy about their intentions. It's not like they're actually trying to make anything better. They're trying to force behavior, which you only do if your behavior isn't something that you can make an argument for, right? Force is the last grasp of somebody who can't make an argument for something.
Yeah.
It's just completely insane. I want to get more into Larry Fink and the way he's taken over BlackRock, and almost like they're just rubbing it in our face at this point, but it's appropriate. I mean, BlackRock is the organization putting all this together, but we have a lot of other stuff to get into as well.
From Blackstone. Blackstone came first, right, and it gave birth to BlackRock. I mean, there's a lot of things touching a lot of issues the American public cares about. Leon Black is over at Blackstone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to know why he paid Epstein $100 million. For tax advice.
It all ties in together.
Right? For tax advice.
Absolutely.
The head of one of the largest investment institutions in the world needed tax advice from Epstein, a guy with no college education, no certifications, but it was tax advice.
Very expensive.
Definitely $100 million worth of tax advice, everybody. It was most definitely not payment for anything else.
I mean, that
nothing is connected. Nothing.
That's the craziest part. Like, obviously it's all so deeply intertwined together. And like, even as you're talking about, you know, the fact that all the normal people have more in common with each other than we do with the billionaires that are controlling things. I mean, I feel the same way when it comes to Israel, when it comes to Epstein. All of these topics are cross-party.
Yep.
Democrats are crying out for Epstein. We're crying out for Epstein.
Yep.
Democrats are pissed that we're supporting Israel. Right-wingers are pissed we're supporting Israel. So it's like, how... So that's at the end of the last segment, I was saying it feels like there's an opportunity. It feels like we could break out of these molds, then we have a massive majority on our side on all of these topics.
And what does that take? Voting out the incumbents is the only path, because every one of them is staying silent right now because they are allegiant to AIPAC. They are allegiant to ChemAg. They are allegiant to pharma. They are allegiant to big oil. They are allegiant to all these special interests, these private equity firms, all of it. Franpac, all of them, okay?
Right.
They are allegiant to the people that control them through money. And until we show them that we're not going to vote how we're told, nothing will change. Nothing.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, you want to talk about who's disappointing the left? AOC is entirely silent on Israel. Mm-hmm. Entirely. Her campaign was funded by a group that's closely aligned with AIPAC.
Right.
Okay? She is entirely silent on this issue. All right? You want to talk about letting down your entire institutional base?
Right.
Just look there. You can't say that we're America first, except for these other guys.
Yeah, yeah.
On the right, you can't do that. So when you look at people like Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie that are speaking, Rand Paul who are speaking, right, you see that they're only the ones that are unencumbered. Because
right.
they represent the interests of their voters or they lose their jobs. They don't have the money, so if they lose their voters, they lose their jobs. That is the answer to all our problems.
Right.
Now, I was in the car with my son. He's just turned 9. And my son, they were watching Miss Rachel.
Okay.
And she was talking about kids in Gaza.
Right.
I don't think I've ever talked to my kids about, I try to shelter my kids as much as I can from some of this stuff, especially with me being in politics all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
They asked me what it was, and I showed them some videos that were really hard to watch. And my son is so patriotic. He's so patriotic. And he said, Mom, why isn't our government helping those kids? It wrecked me. And I said, well, buddy, there's a lot of people spending a lot of money to make sure we don't help those kids.
Right.
And he's like, our government is hurting those kids? And do you know what he responded? I actually have the video. I haven't posted. I've been too afraid to post it, of him talking to me in the van. He goes, why don't we just get rid of everyone in our government so we can help, like, stop helping
right,
that government?
Right.
Out of the mouths of babes, it is that simple. Doesn't matter if your issue is Israel. It doesn't matter if your issue is pharma. It doesn't matter if your issue is private equity. It does not matter if your issue is big oil or green energy or whatever. It doesn't matter what side you're on. If your issue is that your government is not serving you, there is a simple answer. Why don't we just get rid of the people in our government and we can get our government to do what we want? If my 9-year-old can figure it out, turned 9 like 3 weeks ago, guys. Like, if my 9-year-old has that very clear, like, just, why don't we get rid of the people in our government? That's like, a great idea, buddy.
Yeah.
Good call.
If only it was that. I mean, well, it's our founding documents literally laid out in black and white.
Black
when it comes, you know, abusive to the ends, it has to be replaced. And like that is supposed to be. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, too, especially when it comes to something like AIPAC. You know, it's like you've got, as you lay out, you got guys like Thomas Massie, who it's like if they don't do what their voters want, they're out. And it was the case with Ron Paul as well. You know, for years and years, it was like, his base was his base, and they told him what to do. Now you've got – they don't need to concern themselves with the base. Why would they care? As long as they do what their AIPAC handler says, then they're golden. That's what they have to concern themselves with.
This is what worries me about our pendulum swings we were talking about.
Mm.
Historically, every time this happened, we would unseat a bunch of incumbents. But there was no big money controlling everything.
Right.
Back then, we had the fairness doctrine where everybody had to get a voice on TV.
Right.
Right? And I'm not saying everybody loves that. But everybody got choices, and it was in our face.
Yeah.
We didn't just have to show up that day and be like, vote red or vote blue.
Right.
Right? And we weren't as easily controlled. They weren't allowed to manipulate us through ads the way they do now. It was not, the propaganda was not the level it is today. And so what worries me today is that historically we have always drug our politicians back to the middle so that the pendulum would stop, like, doing huge arcs and eventually breaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is inevitably what broke Rome. That is what broke, like, the greatest, like, Persia. That's what's broken everyone, is huge swings from one dichotomy to the other. And when you think about the fact that we started with big swings, like, from Bush to Obama to, you know, Trump to, and then we're 4-year swings now.
Right.
Now
right.
we're in 4-year swings. And we are doing huge swings, and nothing is getting better. We've had 30 years of the same fiscal policy and the same foreign policy, no matter who we elect. And over the last, like, 16 years, that has gone up by, like, 2,000% when you actually look at it.
It's astonishing, yeah.
And so when you think about that, statistically, we can do something. Historically, we've never had this much controlled opposition.
Right.
And it's scary.
And, you know, when you were saying at the beginning of the segment, you know, Americans tend to come together and pull ourselves out of it. Unfortunately, a lot of times that comes along with a war, sometimes a world war in the case of something like the Depression. So I worry about that, too, that these guys, they see, because you're right. I mean, it's like if you picture the waveform, it's like the frequency and the, you know, amplitude are both just going off the charts. We're coming to some sort of crux here, some sort of end one way or the other. And I worry that the people in charge go, hey, we got no option now. It's got to be world war, which obviously they're trying with Iran and Russia.
Trying.
So all of these things are so deeply intertwined. and not to go totally into a different direction, but it's not really a different direction because, again, they're all braided together in this noose around our neck. Maha, just I didn't even know you're telling me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, folks. I pay attention to the news all day, every day, but somehow I missed the release of this.
It was a leak.
Maha Commission. Yeah, it was a leak of the Maha Commission. Tell us about this.
So the Maha Commission report was supposed to come out back on the 12th. Mm. That was the word on the street, and then they said, no, we're going to do it in a couple weeks. We're just finalizing some details. And then just literally like a couple days later, it was leaked to the New York Times, a draft of it. We don't know if it was a final draft or an early draft. We're all hoping that it was an early draft because Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Is the chair of the Maha Commission, but he controls HHS. He does not control the FDA, does not control the EPA.
Yeah.
But he does control the commission and the report that comes from the commission. And so as a result, right now, what the commissioner is allowed to do, he can't control what the EPA does, but he cannot approve their inclusion in the commission report.
Okay.
He gets to control the phrasing. He gets to control the tenor. He gets to control the messaging. He can say, absolutely not, I'm not approving this, because he is the chair. And I understand there's a lot of jockeying involved, but we have a president that told us we wanted to make America healthy again. We have a lot of people on the left and right that fully bought into that and said, absolutely, our kids are sick. Children have autism at unprecedented rates. We are sicker than any country on earth. We have food companies that are keeping us addicted. Like, absolutely. Let's make America. There was the one thing that we were like, yeah, we all.
Another
like
thing we can come together on. Yes.
93%. We have a lot of values in common.
Do you want to eat plastic? No. Right. Great. No, we're on the same side.
We love that for us. I don't want to eat plastic. They don't want to eat plastic. We're all good. Yeah. Okay. And then he put Bobby in charge of HHS and put up a bunch of roadblocks.
Hmm.
They used Doge to drop a bunch of insiders from healthcare companies all around him to get in the way of his agenda. Right. They put Brad Smith as the Doge chair for HHS, the guy who founded a healthcare company that depends on HHS money for their success.
Right.
And he dropped a bunch of his employees all around Bobby to control opposition and to create controlled opposition. They did the same thing everywhere else. But then they put Zeldin in charge at the EPA.
Right.
Like the lobbying darling for Chem Agra. Okay, the same people that are lobbying all across the United States with the American Legislative Exchange Council to give immunity for chem agri companies, that so that farmers that get cancer can't sue them, when Iowa has the highest cancer rate in the United States by like double.
Right.
Okay. When the farmers have more cancer than anyone else, they have the access to immediate fresh food, and they have more cancer than anyone else, and no one thinks that's weird.
Right.
Couldn't possibly be to do with the pesticides. And so instead, what they came out with in the Maha Commission report we've all been waiting for, the only suggestion in this leak is that Americans need an education program so that they can better understand how good and safe pesticides are for us. We're just too dumb to understand it, everybody. We're just too stupid.
You don't understand why it's good that the frogs are turning gay.
I'm going to give you a pro tip. If an industry needs immunity, they're doing something wrong.
Right.
There's never been any industry that needed immunity in history that didn't need to protect themselves from lawsuits.
Right. It's vaccines, pesticide companies.
That's pretty much it. No,
private equity now. Yeah, now you can't sue private equity.
You can't sue your 401k manager anymore. Immunity done. There's never been an industry that needed immunity. And I want to be clear. We are, nothing that's happening here in anything that's going on is free market. We're supposed to be a free market capitalist society. And if we were, I would support that.
Absolutely.
We are a crony captured capitalist society. Okay. And what we are is a company or a country that gives capitalist penalties to the citizens. Mm-hmm. We suffer under capitalism effects while we give socialist bailouts to corporations.
Yep.
Okay. That's what we do.
And grant them monopoly.
Every American suffers the negative effects, the downside of our crony capitalist society, and all of our corporations get bailed out. Yep. That is socialism for corporations. Okay. And when you think about that and you recognize that if you give immunity, bad conduct doesn't come out in court. We can't create boycotts. That is not capitalism. Capitalism requires transparency.
Yep.
When you hide things in the secret arbitrations, we've talked about secret arbitration courts, like I've been fighting with the private equity firm I'm fighting.
Yep.
When you do that, that is not transparency. The American public cannot see evil corporations doing evil deeds, and Americans cannot get justice. And that is not capitalism.
Yep.
We are in a captured society right now. And none of our politicians are going to speak up because they're being paid not to.
And all of the big industries have systematically been consolidated over the last little while. I remember when I first started working in InfoWars, it happened right, so it must have been 7 years ago, around 2017, all these big companies, it was like Dow, Monsanto, I can't even remember all of them, but it was like, there were like 10 big companies and they all became two big companies. And it was all these, you know, Chem Ag companies.
And all of those companies are owned by the same four companies.
Exactly.
And they all have the same shareholders and it's all very incestuous. And people say, like, why aren't we breaking them up? Like, we have laws. We're supposed to break them up. Yeah, we are supposed to break them up. I'm really disappointed in Trump and what he's done at the FTC. Incredibly disappointed.
Well, and this was always, it was always my pitch. You know, the false dichotomy now is between what they call, you know, unrestricted capitalism, which, as you point out, has nothing to do with capitalism. It's completely monopolistic, crony capitalism, does not count as capitalism. But the false dichotomy is either let the companies do whatever they want, or you have socialism and, you know, community ownership of the means of production. And it's like, what about the American way? What about the American government steps in, uses the collective power of the people to stop corporations taking advantage of them? It's what we've done since Teddy Roosevelt and before.
Yep.
This is, there's nothing out of, you know, the American character when it comes to holding corporations in, you know, to task. But for some reason, the right wing worships at the feet of corporations still to this day, even though, you know, I would think we would have realized what was going on a decade ago by now. But people still fall into that false dichotomy where they think if you want the government to do anything on behalf of the American people, it's socialism and you have to reject it. There's an American way to do this.
But we're fine with giving socialism to corporations. That is what we're doing. That is what we're doing with our private equity bailout with our retirement funds right now. That is socialism to corporations. There is a reason that for almost a decade they've been lobbying to get this access. And I'm sorry, I don't know any company, any industry that's ever lobbied for something that the American people never lobbied for that was good for the American people.
Right.
Okay, but we're all just, what, too dumb to understand how good it is for us? Billionaires love to share their wealth with us because that happens all the time. No, they don't share their wealth. What they're doing is socializing the risk of the downfall of their industry.
Right.
And over the next decade, that's what's going to happen is we're going to bear the risk and they're going to get out clean.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I was talking about this earlier this week because I just, like, I was trying to put myself in the mindset of the normie. Like, if I didn't know any of this, it's like, how, what can you say to people to like wake them up to the real threat that we're under? Because there's this weird condition in humans where it's like, if it hasn't happened yet, they're like, bah, whatever. You're just making things up, right? If you're like, hey, they're going to try to make us eat bugs. They're like, what are you talking about? I'll never eat
bugs.
They
do that now.
And then, yeah, and then you go, hey, look, there's bugs, you know, this ingredient that this is a bug. And they go, oh, well, there's bugs in the food. What are you going to do about it?
Carmine color.
So
yep.
Before it happens, it's a crazy conspiracy theory. And then when it happens, well, it's just the way it is. I guess we just got to go along with it. So it's like, okay. They have a plan for the world. BlackRock, the renters society. I mean, what is the phrase we need to use to capture people's minds? Cause that's what, it feels like we just don't have the right word to break through the NPC firewall to go, this is crazy what they're trying to reshape humanity into, and you shouldn't be for it, and you have to fight back against it.
For anyone that doesn't believe we're being conditioned and prepared to be a renter society, did you see what happened at Volkswagen this week? I think it was Volkswagen.
Oh, is this they limit the torque,
you
the horsepower
buy a, you buy
in your car?
You buy your electric car.
Crazy.
And your car is pre-made to have high horsepower. But if you want to access that horsepower, you have to rent it from them monthly.
And they've seeded
this in.
After
you've paid the car off.
Yep.
You cannot use your own horsepower in the car you've bought. And I think BMW or another company is testing it with heated seats.
That's what
I know,
yeah.
The car is made with heated seats, but if you want it, you will also pay a fee. There was recently a bassinet that came out. There, I think it might be like a Nest bassinet. There's a bassinet that came out. It was like $1,500 or $1,800. Very expensive. And then suddenly, after you owning it for 8 months, they turn on a subscription and your bassinet for your baby will no longer work unless you pay a subscription fee every month.
I've seen the same thing with a printer. You can have the printer, you have the ink, but you have to pay a monthly subscription to use your own product.
Anybody that doesn't recognize that they are buying up entire communities of new homes and then saying we have a housing crisis. We don't have a housing crisis. We have a corporations in housing crisis.
Yep.
Okay. Everybody can say, oh, we don't have enough houses. We don't have enough houses that Americans can afford because corporations are artificially inflating the price through all kinds of the same monopoly money tactics we just talked about.
Yep.
Okay. A corporation, let's say Blackstone could buy because they are the largest holder of single family homes in the world.
Right.
They also own all of the college dorms now, which is why another contributor to colleges being out of control. All the dorms at college are now owned by Blackstone as well. They buy a whole housing, like a 500 house division. And they're going to get those at a huge discount because they only make five models and they buy everything right. in bulk. They might, we might have had to pay $500,000 for it. They're getting them at $300,000.
Right.
Okay. They buy 500 houses at $300,000. Okay. They put them all in a portfolio. They could flip that through a secondaries market, but even better, they could hold those houses for a year. Don't let anyone move in. Keep it looking like a construction zone. Okay. And then a year later, they sell three of those houses that they bought for $300,000 to themselves in another fund for $700,000.
And they've just,
and that creates three comps in the neighborhood. They do one of each of the models. Okay. And now the entire neighborhood, each house is valued at $700,000. And then they're going to turn them into obscene rentals. And simultaneously, they're going to have a double and a half value on that portfolio to borrow against.
Right.
And every American in that community was just priced out of everything around that community.
God, they're so smart. Aren't they just so smart the
they're
way
so
they
disgusting.
Do this? They're
yeah.
so just clever the way
so
they do
clever.
This, isn't it?
And you know, what's clever is that they've controlled our politicians so that they don't pass laws that make meaningful change.
Right.
A lot of people say, oh, it's the bureaucracy. I was actually told this the other day. I was in a debate and somebody said, it's the bureaucracy. It's the bloated bureaucracy is why we have problems. We can't vote out. They told me we cannot vote out incumbents. We have to rein in the bureaucracy. I said, first of all, Chevron is gone.
Right.
And second of all, the only reason the bureaucracy has any power at all is because politicians on both sides are paid by corporations to make laws that are so lazy that don't actually define what the American people need. And then the bureaucracies get control because they have not defined what the law is supposed to do.
Right.
If you actually use specificity, single item bills, right? If we actually did what we need to do, they could say, like, because the loopholes get created and bureaucracy gets involved. Let's say they passed a law. No corporation can own more than 10 homes. And that's how they leave it.
Right.
Just no corporation can own more than 10 homes. Well, then BlackRock would create 1,000 LLCs and each one would buy 10 homes.
Right.
No corporation owned by any parent corporation or shell corporation can own 10 homes. How about no corporations aside from nonprofits can acquire anything? Because we need halfway houses. We need nuns to live places. We need some things, right? But like you could be specific and write a good law. We have more lawyers per capita in Congress
right.
than we have in any other profession aside from lawyers in the world.
Right.
We could write a good law. We just get paid not to.
Yeah. And again, I mean, everything you're talking about with the neighborhood, but to me, it just goes down to the personal level of weight. So in the future they want for me, I'm going to pay the same amount that I pay for a mortgage, only at the end of 20 years, instead of owning a house, I'll own
You'll
nothing.
Own more rent.
I'll own
higher
more rent.
Rent, and you'll be priced out of it, and you'll end up what? Homeless, destitute in your retirement?
Yeah. So
if you ever get there?
So like who would, and so, and again, you know, the point to understand is, they're not asking us. They're not, they're not pitching this and going, you know, right now you pay $1,000 a month for a mortgage and 20 years you own your house. What if instead you pay us $1,000 and then you own nothing and we always own it and we can let the cops in whenever they want and we don't have to adhere to the Fourth Amendment or any, you know, restrictions in that regard. They don't need a warrant because we actually own it and we have a key to your house.
I mean, so don't worry. Palantir's going to tell them what's going on.
Yeah,
we're good.
God, there's that on top of all of it. But it's like if they had to make, or you have to stop eating steak, you have to eat bugs and plastic. It's like nobody would go for it. So they're not asking you. They're doing it.
They're just
buying up the houses.
They're just
outbidding you by $100,000 in cash.
As fast as they can.
So we have to stop them. You cannot just go, nobody wants this, so it's not going to happen. No, it's happening. You have to step up, stop it, be an interference for them.
Let's talk about a solution. There are 18 states in the United States that are referendum states where any American that lives there can go out, write a bill, and get a bunch of friends together and go collect 10,000 signatures. That's the average.
Right?
10,000 signatures. And get it on the ballot. Now they'll come for you hard.
Right.
It's going to take movements, but you just circumvent your politicians. Go state of Nevada. I'm looking at you. Go write a referendum bill and say that these corporations can't buy your houses anymore. Make them divest.
And hell, even
get rid of them.
Even if your law doesn't pass, make enough noise that they have to actually talk about it. Because that the way they get away with it is nobody ever asks them to justify their decisions. They just make the decisions and they just get it implemented. If you can create attention about it and get them to answer questions about what they're doing, everybody's going to see what they're doing and no one's going to stand for it.
Yep.
I wish we had 10 more hours. Tiffany, TiffanyCiancy.com, the Vino Mom, incredible stuff. Follow her on TikTok. Stay up to date. Get active. Thank you so much for being with us, Tiffany.
Thanks for having me.
Just got in my methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm really interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, yeah, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And, pretty
excited to see how this is going to work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of, hopefully, of what is the unlimited power.
What's going on, Xers? J-Rocket here. Just giving you all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USB grade, the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity. I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll need to probably take a, you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, you'll need to go to the alexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.